Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
All right, so businesses are trying to reopen during the pandemic, and in order to do that, they're using monitoring systems to screen employees for the coronavirus. They have a lot of options, as NPR's Jason Beaubien discovered.
In March of this year, Dr. Atsintia Molek found himself at the epicenter of the U.S. coronavirus pandemic. Molek oversees three CarePoint health hospitals in northern New Jersey, and they were swamped with people trying to get help.
One day I saw a big line outside the entrance of the hospital, and they were manually checking everybody's temperature and giving them stamps.
Molek thought, this is crazy.
The lines were all the way out to the garage.
Taking everyone's temperature with handheld thermometers was diverting his frontline staff, burning through precious personal protective equipment, and creating a bottleneck of potentially infectious patients outside his door. So he hired a company that uses thermal scanners to take the temperature of up to 20 people at a time as they approach the front entrance.
Checks the temperature and communicates to the security personnel, which can go into any system inside the hospital, so we can have a rapid throughput of these people into the hospital.
The thermal scanners are made by a company called Zyder. The readings can be used simply to let people in the door or for the company to keep a continuous record of employees' temperatures. Zyder is just one of dozens of firms offering systems to help employers confront the new challenges of COVID-19. Some of them are as simple as an app for employees to report any COVID symptoms. Others use Bluetooth devices on company ID badges to make sure workers are staying at least 6 feet apart. Then if someone comes down with COVID, the company knows exactly who that person had contact with for how long, and even when exactly their temperature started to rise. Harish Pai is the chief technology officer at Zyder.
All of that data can be tracked through a cloud-based portal as well on an ongoing basis. So you have a complete snapshot of your organization across facilities, across locations, and what is your risk of exposure?
Zyder has another system that uses facial recognition linked to a network of digital cameras around the facility.
The digital camera-based solution, which is very non-intrusive, is probably much more secure because it can track a person all through the facility and be able to identify that person.
But many people might consider this surveillance an invasion of privacy. Some employees will find it creepy if their every movement and even their body temperature is being tracked by their boss. Should HR know exactly how long you spent in the bathroom? But in the midst of a pandemic, a firm may want to know if too many people are congregating in a break room. Amazon is using a camera-based AI system it calls Distance Assistant to keep people spaced out in its warehouses. Pai from Zyder says industrial plants where work from home isn't possible are some of their biggest customers.
For example, we are deploying the entire contact tracing, the surveys and the cameras-based solution for a customer, for a large manufacturing customer out of Malaysia as we speak.
Some companies are adopting the bare minimum, doing just enough so the health department allows them to operate. Others, like the manufacturing plant in Malaysia, are monitoring every interaction at their workplace. Kristen Baker-Spohn, a partner with the tech venture capital firm CRV, says employers need to be very clear about the purpose of the new technologies they're using.
So if that purpose is the collective health of your employer and company population, I think that's something that we'll see a lot of people be excited and eager to adapt to. But how you frame and how you protect that information is paramount to making sure that there's adoption and success.
And potentially keeping coronavirus outbreaks in the workplace to a minimum. Jason Beaubien, NPR News.
Like brother hell.
During the pandemic, state unemployment systems have become a target for organized crime rings. They steal money through fraudulent claims. But arguably a bigger problem is that some of the systems in place to prevent fraud like that have been hurting millions of innocent people. NPR's Chris Arnold reports.
When Sevi Guash lost his job as a food and beverage manager at a Marriott hotel near San Jose, he figured, okay, I'll apply for unemployment. This was back in March. He went online, put in his info, waited for weeks, couldn't get through on the phone. After more than a month, he was told to mail in more proof of his identity.
My driver's license, picture of my passport, copy of my W-2, she said the more documentation that I could put in there to prove who I was would help out my case.
Help out his case. Guash had clearly lost his job with a big company. He had ID. What was the problem? But this drag on and on. Weeks would go by, they'd need another document, and 6 months later, Guash still hadn't gotten any unemployment money, and he can't find another job.
I had about $17,000 saved.
Guash is 32 years old, and he'd been saving up to go back to community college to try to become a computer programmer. He moved into a smaller apartment to save money, but he still had to drain that entire savings for college. There's not enough left to pay rent next month.
I got to watch what I worked really hard to get dwindle away. I don't want to get angry in front of you for the interview, but it has been really, really frustrating.
And the whole thing just seems so Kafka-esque and avoidable to him.
It's so hard to just prove that you exist.
In California alone, millions of people are having a hard time proving they exist as they struggle to get the unemployment benefits that they deserve. And it turns out Guash is right. A lot of this was completely unnecessary. All right, so to understand what's going on, let's just say that I was going to apply for unemployment.
And you had written Christopher Arnold, but your Social Security card said Chris Arnold or something like that.
That's Jennifer Palka. She was brought in by the state of California over the summer to co-chair a strike team to figure out why there were such massive delays. She was a top technology advisor in the Obama White House. So, like she said, maybe I forgot to enter my middle initial or something minor.
It's not that hard to tell that you're the same person.
But Palka and her strike team found out that that would send up a warning that, uh-oh, could be fraud. We need to do what's called further identity verification. And that means a manual review. People have to review your case. People swamped with 10 times the normal number of claims.
Right. So if you applied for unemployment assistance, you had a 40% chance of getting flagged for manual processing.
For the vast majority, it was for this ID verification. This is what appears to have happened to Guash, and Palka found that many other people suffered through traumatically long delays.
Those 40% of people, which is a lot, had very little chance of getting paid in any reasonable time frame.
At a hearing with lawmakers in July, Sharon Hilliard, the head of the California Unemployment System, or EDD, apologized to those people.
Most importantly, what I want to make sure everyone understands is that EDD sincerely regrets any payment delays.
But Palka's strike team realized that the payment delays, they just didn't need to happen. All this ID verification to try to stop fraud, it was completely outdated.
Sadly, they haven't been protecting the system from much fraud. They catch very few people.
Like really, really very few people. Remember, her report found that 40% of the people applying for benefits face these big delays. So millions of people who deserve benefits are getting hung up in this net. How much actual fraud is that successfully catching?
Less than 0.5% of people, less than 0.5% of people are caught as fraudulent through this tactic.
This is not just a problem in California. Millions of people around the country are facing big delays. By one count, 15 million Americans who filed for unemployment still haven't gotten any benefits. And experts say outdated fraud prevention systems are a big part of the problem. But at least in California, things are finally changing. The state has followed a recommendation from the strike team and brought in an outside company with a much more sophisticated system. So Palka says starting as of just a few days ago, people can now verify their identity very quickly when they apply just using their phone.
It actually asks you to take a photo of your ID, probably your driver's license, right then and there. And then it actually asks you to take a selfie. And it's then drawing on many different databases in a very sophisticated way to really understand if you are who you are.
Palka says a lot of people are working very hard in the state unemployment office, but the hope is that 90% of applicants can now get processed quickly and avoid the dreaded manual review. For his part, Sevi Guash, who had to spend his college savings, says that he spoke to a representative late last week.
She let me know that I'm literally ready. They have all of my information entered.
But someone with more authority still had to give the final approval.
So I found out I'm waiting on my mysterious hero, wherever they may be.
That mysterious hero just came through. Quash tells us more than 6 months after he applied, his account now shows that the state has finally started paying him his unemployment money. Chris Arnold, NPR News.
Since the onset of the pandemic, tech workers have been leaving the Bay Area en masse, leaving behind empty offices, San Francisco's famous fog, and sky-high rent. And as employees head to cheaper places to carry out their remote work, some Silicon Valley companies have started adjusting worker salaries, cutting their pay 15% or more, depending on where the employee moves. As you can imagine, not everyone is too happy with the change. Our reporter Catherine Binley joins me to discuss. Katie, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
Katie, I wonder if you could just give us a sense for the scale of this tech worker flight, so to speak, away from Silicon Valley.
Oh, yeah. It's still pretty hard to know that because we don't have census data yet. But the real estate market in San Francisco has started to be affected by people leaving. So you're seeing, rents on one-bedroom apartments come down. Housing inventory as far as sales has gone up quite a bit. And even in my own experience, I asked my landlord if they would reduce my rent and they chopped $200 a month off of it. So it seems to be happening.
And you report that some companies have begun to adjust compensation for the people leaving. What are we seeing?
Yeah, so, for a lot of companies, they're still figuring this out, but this tech consulting firm named Sequoia did do a recent survey, and at the time I spoke with them, they had 240 tech companies surveyed, and they found that 33% are still undecided about what's going to happen to employee pay for those that relocate. And then 22% said they are readjusting salaries, and 20% said they're not. So you've really got a mix of how companies are handling this. Of course, earlier in the pandemic, Facebook had said that they would be, if people are moving to cities with lower cost of living, that there would be some kind of adjustment for that. And, for a lot of companies, this makes sense. I mean, they've, not been paying their San Francisco employees the same as employees who live in cities that are much less expensive for a while. But in this case, it's kind of going in the opposite direction than what we're used to. You're used to hearing, employees getting recruited to come out to the Bay Area and getting, a nice salary to do so because it is so expensive to live here. But now things are starting to go in the opposite direction where you might have, a tech worker who's used to making a certain amount of money moving to Austin or Denver or, Portland, wherever else, where it is more affordable. And so then this question becomes, is it fair? And some employees, there seems to be basically debate over, whether or not this should be happening.
And what have you heard from tech workers about this? How are they responding?
I found one Twitter employee I interviewed had said that she wouldn't specify what the pay cut was, but she did take a reduction in pay to move to, I think it was Durham, North Carolina. But she said, compared to what she was paying for rent in Berkeley, the adjustment in pay was completely worth it. And she still seemed to think that, financially it was the right decision. And her husband works at Fitbit and he was taking a pay cut as well. So they did the math and just thought that it was still they were going to be fine even with the cuts. But then if you look at some survey results from Blind, you have that of, I think they surveyed, 5,500 workers. And 44% said they'd be open to a pay cut if they were moving to a city with a lower cost of living, but 48% said they wouldn't be. So clearly, there is a chunk of people who don't want to see their pay reduced if they're going to be moving. And I've seen a lot of chatter about this in the comments on, posts on Blind where people are sort of debating whether or not this is fair, whether or not it's worth it to them. And then another gentleman I spoke with had talked about having, he got hit up on Twitter by a bunch of people asking for negotiation advice and sort of how could they, his suggestion to them was to try to push back on it, basically.
Yeah, and I want to understand that. So for the workers that are pushing back on these cuts, what exactly is their argument?
Based on sort of the talk I'm seeing, it seems to be, if you're going to be doing the same amount of work and your output is the same and you're a high performing employee, then why does it matter where you're physically located? That seems to be the argument that I've been picking up from my research. But for other people, it's their thought is cost of living and cost of labor adjustments have been going on for God knows how long. So why should the tech workers be any different?
And Katie, I think a big part of that, when we think about tech offices, we probably are thinking about these big campuses with cold brew on tap and ping pong tables and nap pods. With more remote workers, wouldn't companies be cutting a big cost by eliminating all those extra perks in the office?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's going to be an interesting thing to watch. You know, certainly tech companies especially have been known for giving their employees really great perks. So, you know, if they're not spending money to feed everyone every day and, you know, not having classes at the on-campus gym and whatnot, or, you know, when we do go, let's say we go back to a, you know, a situation where some, you know, some employees are back in the office, you know, it sounds like for a lot of companies, there will be fewer people in offices going forward for the long term. So will they be saving money? Like, probably they're certainly going to save money on some of those expenses, and it'll be, you know, we might see their real estate portfolio shrink. And then, you know, then there's the question of what does it cost to have more remote employees, and are there hidden costs to that that won't be so great for them?
Yeah, and like you mentioned, a lot of these companies have been making commitments to have much heavier dependence on remote work going forward. So I imagine this push and pull is not going to go away anytime soon. What are you going to be watching as this continues to develop?
I mean, I think some of the areas that are going to be most interesting to watch are going to be pay equity, for one. You know, there's research that women sort of accurately assess that there are social costs to trying to negotiate. So, you know, you kind of, I wonder, at least 6 months from now, a year from now, will there be more of a pay gap between men and women who work in tech, at least for those who relocated? Because you could, you know, in theory, have someone who decides to negotiate a bigger bonus or more equity in order to make up for, you know, the reduction in their base. And someone else who either thinks it's too risky to try doing that and is like, well, I should just be grateful that they let me move. So, you know, in theory, there could be some sort of unintended consequences of this because, you know, companies can say it's a policy that you have X percent reduction if you move to Y city. But from what I, you know, like a talent agent that I interviewed mentioned that he was suggesting that his clients try to, you know, negotiate other aspects of their pay to make up for it. And he has one client who was using the move as a way to jumpstart a conversation about getting an early promotion. So there's, I think it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out.
All right. We'll keep an eye on this. Wall Street Journal reporter Katie Binley, thanks so much for stopping by.
Thanks.
By now, it's no secret that Black and Latino residents in lower income communities have been among the hardest hit by the coronavirus in L.A. County. During the height of transmission in July, Latinos in L.A. were dying at a rate more than four times higher than that of whites. Black people were twice as likely as white people to die of the disease. But over the past couple of months, those stats have begun to change, actually for the better. The COVID-19 death and case rates among blacks and Latinos has actually declined. And L.A. County officials say it has something to do with aggressive workplace health enforcement and empowering workers to monitor their places of employment, which includes anonymous tip lines to report violations. Ana Almendrala is a correspondent with Kaiser Health News and has been covering California's most vulnerable communities throughout the pandemic. Let's start with the numbers, Ana. How do the COVID-19 case and death rates among Black and Latino people in L.A. County compare now to white people?
Well, as you said, during the summer surge, Latinos were dying at a rate of more than four times that of whites. Blacks were dying at a rate of twice that of whites. By mid-September, which is the latest age-adjusted data we have available, death rates among both Blacks and Latinos have fallen by more than half, and they're approaching the rate for whites. Now, when it comes to case counts, there were more than four times as many positive cases among Latinos than whites in late July. But now, well, actually, by mid-September, the Latino case rates are only 64% higher. And the positivity rate among Blacks was about 60% higher than that of whites in late July, but the disparity seems to have waned by mid-September.
How do we know that the difference comes from workplace changes? I mean, what tells us that people are contracting the virus from where they work?
Well, experts don't know for sure that workplace transmission was responsible for the summer surge in LA. I mean, remember, in addition to reopening the economy, which is something that happened statewide, those cases were also a few weeks after Memorial Day weekend, which, as you know, had a lot of family gatherings and get-togethers. But what LA County can say is that workplace investigations have found clusters of cases in workplaces, which then get transmitted back to communities in the form of overcrowded housing, inability to isolate or quarantine. And we also know about the virus itself, which can be transmitted via droplets or maybe even aerosols. Now, that means that people at a higher risk of infection, the longer that they stay indoors with others who are infectious, they're also at a higher risk of infection the closer they are to somebody. So that means that workplace transmission is a really plausible way for these cases to spread.
When it comes to workplace health enforcement, what does that entail exactly? And who's doing the enforcing?
Yeah, well, what we know is that LA County Public Health Department issues a health officer order, which is, you know, will say something like, in order to open your retail store, you need to provide masks to all of your employees. Customers who enter also have to be masked, and everyone needs to stay 6 feet social distance. What we know is that there is a hotline that workers can call or a form that they can fill out on the internet to lodge an anonymous complaint about their workplace. Then a public health investigator will hopefully come out to visit that workplace and assess the measures that are being taken to comply with the health officer order. However, there are only a little less than 400 investigators for the entirety of LA County. So that means, you know, we have a population of about 10 million people. And before the pandemic, there were more than 240,000 registered businesses. So they're really spread thin. Dr. Ferrer has said that these investigators have been working overtime for a long time.
Now, the county officials, when they say that we're seeing these declines now, were workplace health protocols just not being enforced before when COVID-19 cases were at their peak in July?
That could be the case. I mean, in addition to the summer surge, before the summer surge, there was this period of success. Maybe people were feeling that maybe this virus isn't so transmissible. Maybe they were feeling overconfident about their ability to stay away from infections. Whatever the case was, after the summer surge, Dr. Ferrer realized that, hey, workplace needs to be our top priority. And even before the summer surge, knowing about the racial disparities as early as April, I mean, LA was one of the first jurisdictions to call attention to those racial disparities. They knew that Blacks and Latinos were more likely to be classed as essential workers and working in areas where they have the least protections and have to be in the most confined spaces with other employees or customers.
Did the county kind of just leave it up to individual businesses to create and implement their health protocols on this?
What Dr. Ferrer told me was that at the beginning of the pandemic, the County Board of Supervisors were sending business leaders to the Department of Health to sort of work with them on what are reasonable practices, what are reasonable things that we should all be doing together. And as the pandemic wore on, Dr. Ferrer realized that she needed to more seriously involve labor. Now, she says that now we're very explicit about talking to labor. We have dedicated lines for labor. But when it first started, they were mostly talking to business sectors.
Talking to Anna Almendrala, correspondent with Kaiser Health News. Wondering how much is this change also about empowering the employees? I mean, you write that LA County officials want to create workplace councils at businesses to have employees trained to look for COVID-19 prevention violations and then report them without fear of being fired or punished. The LA County Board of Supervisors is expected to approve an ordinance to pass this policy this month. How did the plan come about?
Dr. Ferrer is extremely, extremely excited about this proposal. What she noticed is that especially at shops or factories where the workers are not unionized, the employees needed a way to be able to gather together and air their concerns about the health order violations without fear of being fired or having their hours reduced. This was actually inspired by the negative experiences of another factory in Los Angeles. It's called Overhill Farms. They make frozen food, and it's in Vernon. I spoke to labor experts who said that they also had an outbreak of more than 20 cases and one death. They actually were also hit with more than $200,000 in proposed penalties from Cal OSHA. But before the fines had landed, the factory leadership there was already responding by beginning to hold meetings to improve the safety there.
So this plan, what would it look like? How would it work?
Well, we're not sure yet, but labor and economy researchers who have studied the plan, like Tia Kunz from UCLA, she says that, you know, probably it would take no more than 10% of a workforce or no less than two people to spend a couple hours a week going over any concerns that need to be addressed about violations. And this is not a program where the employees, they envision that the employees go running to the health department immediately. This is something where they are envisioning open communication between employees who are on the shop, on the shop floor, they're on the ground. They're the ones best suited to know what's happening, you know, with customer behavior or how difficult or easy it is to do the work while still being safe. And then, you know, sort of bringing their concerns and suggestions for improvement to management. And, you know, optimally, management would like to have these councils because it's a way for them to protect their employees, their customers, and to continue operating their business as the economy continues to open up.
So that's an ideal situation. But Anna, we know business leaders sometimes when problems emerge, they don't want to either know about it or do much about it. So what have labor groups and others have to say about the implementation of these workplace councils?
Well, you know, if workers feel like their managers are not listening to them, they also have the option of approaching a third-party organization. This is another part of the proposal, which is that a community-based organization would contract with the county to, you know, help train and educate employees about how to talk about violations. And if the violations continue to go unaddressed, employees can go to these third-party companies to sort of help them file a formal complaint to the public health department.
That's Anna Amendrala, correspondent with Kaiser Health News. Anna, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you guys so much for having me.
Context of white supremacy. Gusty Renegade in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Today's date, Friday, October 16th. 2020, so I have been told. This is our weekly forum, Neutralizing Workplace Racism. Man, the cup runneth over. I know frequently throughout the years that we've had workplace racism, we have not had always the chattiest folks. You know, sometimes folks are spectating a little bit, listening in, that sort of thing. I've said throughout 2020, it has been amazing the amount of reports, information that has come out just about changes in the workplace. The COVID-19 situation has caused a variety of changes and disruptions around the world, but with regards to the area of labor, it has been unprecedented. It could be like every week a good just 60 minutes of, wow, this week and the Rona and how it is impacting people on the job. Whether we're talking you're no longer going to work, you've been fired, getting unemployment, you're working from home now, or you're not working from home. You're still working, you know, wherever, on site. Are they following the rules and regulations? Are they not? Are they doing temperature checks? Thermal checks of a dozen people or two dozen people at a time, and it's been extraordinary. Are we doing hugging? Are we not doing hugging? What's the sick leave? It has been amazing. Even within that, just today I had our segment together because I had found so many different reports dealing with things happening in the workplace, so you just heard quite a few. Just today, from the time that I woke up until we went live, I'm on the West Coast, so it's only 5 p.m. in the afternoon. It's not even evening yet here. I was listening and heard a play. It could have been a totally different set of audio clips to start the program with, just from what I heard today, reports that I found today. So they were talking about the impact this is having, the whole COVID-19 situation is having on females in the workplace. And they did a big report on that, and they were saying especially so-called Latinas and kind of the vulnerable position that they're in, and even though it seemed like they talked to some people who could be classified as white and all the rest of it. So they do all of that. And even within that, as though black males, they were saying it's going to increase the pay wealth gap between males and females, and again, white males not being specific enough. But anyway. So that was one. And then they continued. And I was like, man, do I play this report? Do I not play it? I said, man, it's so many of them, we'll go ahead and play it. So this was just a few hours before we got started. Workplace racism continues.
This week, applications for unemployment benefits jumped unexpectedly to their highest since August. This, as a new economic report by Columbia University finds, that millions more Americans are falling into poverty with the expiration of benefits from the CARES Act. It also says Black people and Latinos are more than twice as likely as white people to be poor in this country. People like Jasmine, a 22-year-old Black woman here in Washington, D.C. We aren't using Jasmine's full name because of the social stigma associated with poverty. She tried to get pandemic unemployment assistance back in the spring when everything shut down and she couldn't start a new job at National Stadium.
I was receiving $500 a week. It was rarely enough, but it helped me out. And that stopped, I believe, in June. And ever since then, I have been going through a lot of financial burdens.
Jasmine is a single mom. She's home with her four young kids, including a three-month-old, making it impossible to look for other work. She's already burned through the $4,000 she managed to save up while receiving assistance.
Like, I spent all of it, from buying food and things that me and the kids need, like car insurance and gas, and it hasn't gotten me that far.
With Congress unable to agree on a new round of coronavirus assistance, people like Jasmine are slowly dropping further into poverty every day. We're going to dig into the causes of this with William Spriggs. He's the chief economist for the AFL-CIO and also a professor of economics at Howard University in Washington. Thanks for being here this morning.
Thanks for having me.
What's going to happen to people like Jasmine if Congress can't agree on more federal aid?
For the moment, some people, depending upon where they live, are benefiting from the halting of evictions, but that means they're building up arrears in their rent. Many of them, because they don't have a flow of income, are also building up arrears on utilities, or they're borrowing from Peter to pay Paul, and they're building up arrears there as well. The problem for others is they are in places where evictions are taking place. They're going to need extra deposits in order to get the next rent. Their credit score will have suffered. In some cases, people are sophisticated enough to use the forbearance that's out there for credit cards. Many people don't know about this, and some of them are getting penalties for missing credit card payments.
So it's just a cycle that keeps feeding and pushing people further into this place.
Exactly. It spirals out of control. And the problem is, as you mentioned on the unemployment insurance claims, while we did see the rebound that everyone expected, that rebound has slowed. And the last 3 months, we've seen progressively lower job creation, a buildup of people who are now permanently unemployed as opposed to people reporting that they're temporarily unemployed. And for African Americans, the labor market is now turned back to its discriminating self.
And well, I was going to ask about that. I mean, this is hitting Blacks in America and Latinos harder than whites. This is a big question, and a lot of it is structural, but can you give a concise answer as to why?
Well, there's clear discrimination in the labor market. So the unemployment rate last month for high school dropouts was lower than the Black unemployment rate. That's the depth of the discrimination that Black workers face, that their unemployment rate is higher than the unemployment rate of high school dropouts in this nation.
Let me ask, when it comes to children, child poverty, I mean, we know that a recent study by the University of Chicago and Notre Dame found that Black people and kids have been hit so hard. If we can't turn things around, what does life look like for those children?
This is the real tragedy. We know that spells of poverty permanently scar children because they fall behind on so many dimensions. And that's why it's necessary that we stop this economic thing as soon as possible. It's a long-term scarring for our economy, not just the scarring that we're having immediately, which is very deep to our labor market.
William Spriggs is the chief economist for the AFL-CIO. He is also a professor of economics at Howard University. We so appreciate you taking the time this morning. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Context of white supremacy. Much obliged, Dr. William Spriggs, Howard University. They fired Dr. Welsing there, so be careful. Don't talk about you want to say discrimination. You did right. If you want to stay employed, Dr. Spriggs, discrimination, not white supremacy in the labor market, discrimination. So you can stay employed, sir. Your grandcestor, Dr. Welsing. Now, there are a few times as a victim of white supremacy when I have heard those type of statistics. Like I said, I already had the audio segment together, so I did not really have an intention of playing that clip. It was kind of as I was going throughout the day, like, dang, am I not going to play that? Like, that's explicit workplace racism. Are you really not going to play that? If I had intended, like planned, if I had heard that on Monday as opposed to hearing it this morning, I would have done a rewind there for sure. Like, did you hear that? That's why we have workplace racism every week. The dropout rate for black people, Negros, is higher than the dropout rate, excuse me, the unemployment rate, make sure I get it correctly. The unemployment rate for black people is higher than the unemployment rate for high school dropouts. Now, I didn't just fall off the turnip truck yesterday. I have heard that sort of information before. In fact, you can go 2010, Clarence Lussain, he was a guest on the program. We discussed his book, Pipe Dream Blues. I was in San Francisco when I got that book, read that book, and they have a similar statistic. It is that if you are a convicted criminal, if you are a white convicted criminal, you are more likely to be hired than a black college graduate with no criminal record. I think he has one. But they have lots of little statistics like that that I've seen throughout life to be like, wow, if you want to talk about something to totally demoralize you from doing anything, like, man, I am about to play PlayStation 5, watch basketball, and eat ice cream for the rest of my life. I'm not going to try to do anything. It'll be statistics like that. And they call it discrimination, not system of whites. In fact, the specific way it was phrased was the labor market turned back to its discriminatory self. That is exactly why on the compensatory call-in we have no metaphors, because that for sure is a metaphor. The labor market turned back to its discriminatory self. What? What? You mean white people practice racism, white supremacy, and choose not to employ black people. And they didn't say black and brown people. They didn't say people of color unemployment rate. They said black people. Unemployment rates for black people higher than the unemployment rates for high school dropouts. I am sure it's got to be a gang of racists cackling in the background. That's one and the same. Coon, high school dropout, the same thing, isn't it? High school dropout, Coon. Anyway. So the cup runneth over, there were lots of reports this week for workplace racism. So I'm always staggered as to why we have, you know, people not participating, lots of spectators for workplace racism. Like, it should be lots to discuss this year. So with the initial reports that I had planned to play from the very beginning, so they talked about all this technology in the workplace, which I think always deserves, like, pause and reflection. Like, wow, anytime whites come out with new gadgets, and this is for your safety, we are so concerned about you, Negros. I mean, what is it? Black people? Yes. Not Negros. Black. Yes. We're so concerned about you all. Obama, we just love you. We just love Al Sharpton. We got these new anything. I wouldn't care what it is. Like, pause. Let's do a lot of investigating. Like, man, I don't know if that's happening. It seems we folks were going the opposite way from a lot of the folks that have reported that they have not had, like, thermometers and group temperature checks and that type of thing. But be alert. They had the first report where they were talking about, we got all this fraud, you know. So we got all this technology, and I know the Rona has been tough, and we want to make sure you get your benefits and unemployment, but we got to stop this fraud. So we got to go through 50 different layers. I can relate to that on a personal level. In fact, How did Gus T. Renegade end up on this here broadcast? I tried to be an upstanding, responsible, hardworking Negro, not talking about racism. Living in San Francisco, California, I tried. Now, I worked in the school system there. They issued me my paycheck, right? Too lazy to get direct deposit. I would go to the bank to try to cash my check. Repeatedly, I would be accosted by the bank teller, black person sometimes, white person often, didn't matter. Who are you? Thumbprint, DNA sample, birth certificate, driver's license, social security card. Pause, we're going to see if we can call to verify a parent. If you have a warrant, and we're going to call to verify that you are, in fact, employed. And just for the extra icing on top metaphor, my place of employment, I would go to their bank. So I'm actually taking a check that was issued by the bank where I'm going to cash it at with my name on it and proper identification. Not enough. Anyway, so the white person who was in charge of finance where I worked, every time, let's say once a month, I would happen to stumble down to his office and I would see him. One time I stumbled in, hey, how's it going? We'll say his name is Rick. Hey, how you doing, Rick? How's it going? Blah, blah, blah. And he says, hey, you know something, Gus? And he leans back in his chair and he has a big smile. And he says, you know, we have hundreds of folks who work here. We cut, you know, lots of check, big organization. You are the only person that the bank calls to verify that you do, in fact, work with us. And he just thought that was so funny. I, at the time, was very confused about white supremacy racism, so I just laughed like, yeah, it's crazy, man. What are you going to do? Oh, well. Going to go out and kick it. San Francisco still love California, second best plantation. But that's what I mean about all that. You got to go through all this and, oh, verification. We got to get a urine sample. We got to get a blood sample. We got to get fingerprints. And they said they don't even catch very many people about fraud. I have seen so many reports since the Rona started. They had major fraud. Just in Washington State, the fraud campaign is Washington State. That's got to be probably white people. Statistics just on the population has got to be white people. High likelihood. All of this thieving and getting fake Rona checks and all the rest of it. They even sent out a bunch of them to dead people. That's not even just fraud. That's just incompetence. But you do all this fussing and wrangling. You got to prove holding up your benefits, your family. You don't have groceries. You can't pay your rent. All the rest of this. They were talking all of those problems just getting worse. And, you know, in terms of patience and forgiveness, financial forgiveness and empathy, we don't have that for Negros. You're a looter. You're a super predator, you know. Anyway. So the technology doesn't even work on the one end to stop the fraud, and then you use it to hold up all my benefits, and now you say, oh, well, now we got all these temperature checks and all the rest of it. They got the cameras that they talked about. We don't want a whole lot of people congregating in the bathroom, so now we got new sensors. Like, really? Really? And so even after the Rona is done, are these sensors just going to be a permanent part of the workplace and temperature? Lots. That's why I said it would be lots to think about. If these things aren't happening in your workplace, great, but it is, I think, at least informative to know this is happening at some level for some folks. Let's see. They continued. I don't know if we have any folks who are, they were talking about San Francisco. Seattle is high rent area as well. I don't know if we have any listeners who are maybe being encouraged, you know, you could move out of the San Francisco area and pay lower rent. I don't know if that's happening. I know she was talking about negotiating rent in some areas because of the crisis, so she got her rent by dropped by $200. And even within that segment, there was some more of that a females, white women discrepancy in the workplace. We talked about that, you know, repeatedly on the cows. They even talked about that there might be a cost for females if you try to negotiate. Like, you know, if I'm going to move, maybe I don't want to lose too much of my salary, or maybe I don't want to lose any of my salary at all to try to, you know, get the best offer that you can for yourself in terms of resources and compensation. So I'm sure that might be the case for a lot of black people specifically, but they didn't say that in the report. That's why I said they'll do a lot of reporting like that where it's fine and dandy. You can talk about intersectionality and all the problems in the world that women face. Black people? racism, white supremacy? No, then we got marginalization, discrimination. Now we can't be specific about things. But I suspect that that probably is the case, that if you're a black person, you try to have some black self-respect and negotiate for yourself. Maybe there's a cost. Maybe you're uppity. Maybe not. They mistreat a lot of black people, you know, who do not negotiate or try to do anything to improve things for themselves, too. Let's see. But that is interesting. If we have any folks, if you're in the move situation, talk about moving, but relocating to an area with a lower cost of living, that is interesting. If you have any folks doing that. Let's see. I guess that will most of what I had to say from the reports, but there were many more workplace racism reports. I did, the section about California where they said that black people, black and brown people, so-called Latinos, that they were being greatly impacted by COVID-19 and they had the discrepancies, but they said that these workplace restrictions, they're saying it's some sort of correlation perhaps, and having better restrictions and providing a forum where people can snitch, which is something that I have advocated and I think some of our listeners have all year long, snitch. This is the time. If people are not taking this seriously in your job, they're still doing silliness, snitch. You want to look out for your health and safety. No one else will. So providing anonymous hotlines where things can be reported, saying it seems like that may have been helpful in California. I thought that was important as well because we have had more folks who've been writing in, calling in, talking about wanting to make sure that they can stay safe on the job. And this is at least one report hinting that there may be some impact, constructive impact, to taking it seriously on the job and maybe even seeing some results. So take it serious, snitch. I'll continue to advocate that. The email is untiljustice@gmail.com. The number is 720-716-7300. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. You should be able to listen in at TuneIn, no problem, or online. I know we were disrupted with every problem you can think of, in addition to the Rona, with the live broadcast for a bit. But if you are comfy listening via TuneIn or at Black Talk Radio Network Live, feel free to do so. And share if there are victims of white supremacy, black people dealing with discrimination on the job. You're like, man, my white friend, Timothy, convicted rapist, got a job, and I graduated high school, graduated college, and they won't even hire me. And he's a convicted rapist and a high school dropout, and he got a job. That is why we have neutralizing workplace racism. There is a major problem to solve. So we talked about no spectators as well. If you're listening in, if you have either your own issues or suggestions, help us solve problems without creating new problems, feel free to participate. So last week, I shared, we had an email, one of our young listeners, a young black scholar, has tuned in for a while. His attempted parents, made an effort to share constructive information. I think his mom has dialed in many times over the years. She's done an outstanding job. Extremely challenging job of being an attempted black parent. Like, whew. So he emails me last week, and he says that he's moving to Boston at the beginning of the next calendar year, and this is for school, and that he was invited into this living arrangement. It is an apartment. Invited by two white males, one non-white person with a white parent, one non-white male with a white parent. Cowbell. So we talked about this last week because he was asking, you know, just for tips on how he can stay safe and minimize, avoid problems. We talked about this last week, and I think myself and others said, you know, we have questions. It would be great if we could get additional information to kind of help grasp, you know, what he might be potentially going into. And we had a number of listeners who voiced a lot of concern. Young white people are super dangerous. There are lots of cases. I talked about the case where they had that white woman, racist young, like 18-year-old white woman who stuck the toothbrush in her rectum and did all these other just really savage, barbaric things to terrorize her black female roommate, made her sick even. And she eventually got like criminal charges and all that. Very soft, you know, promise not to do it again. But it's lots of cases of these young white people in university college settings just being totally terroristic, particularly in living arrangements where it's like one black person, so they can kind of gang up on you. We even did that report at San Jose State University. They had an 18-year-old black male student. It was like five or six of his roommates. They hung like a Confederate flag, and they put a bike lock around his neck, called him nigger. They nicknamed him three-fifths. We did a whole program on that and interviewed the folks at San Jose State about that, but that's 2012 in the archives. But it's rampant. It's tons of cases of that. So we had, you know, lots of concern. So this young victim, young black scholar, I told him, we talked about it, and he said, oh man, let me listen to the program. I was trying to find it and got lost, and they deleted the Facebook page and blah, 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 and all this stuff. So he listened to the archive at SoundCloud, Black Talk Radio Network, lots of outlets. So he listened to the archive and wrote back. This is what he said. Thank you so much for all the notes and tips. Here I can answer everything you asked. Number one, I am well acquainted with my potential roommates. We are all male. The one mixed, and he has that in quotes, thankfully, the one mixed person has a white parent and a non-white parent. So that was the danger we were talking about last week. I didn't know if this was, you know, like has a black parent and a Latino parent or whatever it is. So, okay, this, I would have a lot more questions about this person. Like, you know, can this person so-called pass? Could this person be accepted as white? Like, because we talked about that last week, if this person is really white identified, which I would suspect that they are, oof, man, talk about that gang situation. Continuing. Number two, we are all aware of the COVID-19 situation, and we talked about this. We all agree that we shouldn't bring people over, so we might stick to that. Now, he has the word might, and they haven't even moved in yet. I think we talked about this last week. White people, what is it that they say? Speak with forked tongue. Master deceivers. Oh, yeah, we're not going to have any guests over. Oh, no. The Rona is serious. Absolutely. We got to take the Rona seriously, and we're scholars, you know. We're here to learn. So no guests, and we will not have any sort of parties. Beer pong and all that is on pause. Man, you move into January. Let the Super Bowl roll around. You come home, and we talked about this last week. We talked about this last week, that word might. So that's one red flag. Number three, I normally keep my food with me in my room, especially if it's takeout or fast food, so that's not too much to worry about unless we all cook together. I don't know about the cooking together thing, but I think we talked about last week, it would be great if you could get a refrigerator in your room, if you know you're going to do this, so that you can have more autonomy, and just food security to make sure that nothing is being tampered with, because that has been a big... I personally know black people where that ended up being a problem. And one of their roommates was a non-white person with a white parent. Cowbell. Next. Number four, I also see what you're saying about the security situation, keeping my stuff together. I believe each bedroom has a lock. Now, that has a question mark, so he's not quite sure. That's red flag number two. I will keep an update on that with the realtor. I don't normally put my toiletries and such in the bathroom. I keep it with me, so this definitely will not change when I move. Excellent code. Number five, right now I'm trying to keep up with our school situation as well as with Massachusetts. Right now, as of August 31st, the state is requiring a travel form for people entering any part of Massachusetts, requiring enters to quarantine for 14 days unless they took a test no more than 3 days ago, coming back negative. My school wants to go back to being hybrid for the upcoming semester, having a remote option, but offering some on-campus facilities. However, with everything going on, including the election, I highly believe that we will be back to remote learning for the next semester. You know, that, I mean, this part, it's not a whole lot you can do about this, kind of other than what he said in terms of you monitor, you see what happens. But, I mean, with things changing by the day, just with the Rona situation, like, you know, if we're just focused on that for a moment, things changing by the day, they say now it's getting worse, it's getting cold, so people are spending more time inside, you can't do as much outside to get ventilation, and they talk so much about ventilation the last few months, and it's getting cold, so now you're going to have the windows closed and less ventilation. At least those are the reports right now, second wave and all of that, flu season as well. It would seem very, at least my view, I don't have children, so I'm not directly connected to the college experience, but from what I have read, just keeping up with the news and what have you, it would seem very unlikely that there's going to be, like, in person, like, at especially colleges, because they've been so wayward and exactly that. Yes, we're not going to party. Wink, wink. We're not going to party. Yes, no drinking. Wink, wink. And then they're doing beer pong and all the rest. So, I mean, that's just been standard operating procedure all year long. So it's challenging for me to see how this would work out where it's not going to end up having to be remote probably for the entire academic year, like from now until whenever that ends, May, June, whatever. So I don't know. Like, unless you have to be there, like, I would be seriously thinking, like, if this is going to be remote, do I have to be in this situation? Like, I could do this. I mean, if it's remote, you could do this from France, right? I don't have to be in Boston if we're going to be doing this remote. If this is just going to be something online, like, I would be paying attention to see if this, you know, is even going to have to take place. But that's neither here nor there. Next, number six, my roommates do not drink alcohol because none of us are age 19 to 20. I don't know what to, I don't know what to say about that. I think most of the traditionally aged college students are under the age of 21, unless I've been misinformed. Freshman through senior, most of the traditionally aged, my apologies, most of the traditionally aged college students, sophomore through senior, would be majority 18 through 20. That's underage. There is a rampant amount of college drinking. So I don't know. Just if these are white people at a college campus, I would probably assume that they're drinkers. Now, he says that, you know, they're well acquainted, I reckon. I don't know, but they would kind of stand out. Like, if you found teetotalers in a college campus, and you're in a college town that's kind of known for drinking, Boston area, wow, you pulled off a feat. But just because they are under 21 does not mean that they're not going to be consuming alcohol and or other illicit drugs. Red flag number three. Next. Seven, I was also considering a mini refrigerator. Brilliant. The only problem is that we have a fridge that comes with the apartment, and we also have one or two of the other people looking to buy mini fridges, so that's something we could bring up once we get there. I'll also keep in mind what callers advise me to do. If you have any free time, oh, okay. I will try to check in with them. I can only say, like, I would just have lots of red flags. Again, they invited him. I think that's so important for context for this. These two white people and the one non-white person with a white parent, they invited him to this situation. This wasn't like they were all, you know, at the beginning of the year planning to live together or thinking about living together. This sounds like they may have already been together. One of our listeners said, hey, we don't know, white people. The realtor, as he mentioned, could be one of these white people's uncles, grandparents, grandmothers, aunts, mother, father, nephew. I mean, you have no idea. That's one. And that could factor in terms of conduct on the premises if something happens. We had a lot of people who talked about, I think, Mr. Blue especially, you could be booted out. Is your name going to be on the lease and that type of thing if there's some sort of conflict? And we have a gang conflict where they say, oh, you are the problem, sir. You got to get out of here and all the rest of it. Man, if it's one of their relatives is the realtor or owns this property, like, wow, maybe that's not the case. Maybe it's not. It could even just be one of their white homies. Voltron effect, as I've said, white people work together. So it's a lot to just keep in mind. But both with the Rona situation, just the danger of living with white people, even some of the people that listened to the archive of last week just had even more concerns, like, I would not recommend. Even some of the listeners specifically said, if I had a child, I would not recommend that. I would just have lots of concerns. It is dangerous. They said, you just in a system of white supremacy, let's say these are the coolest non-racist white people you could possibly find, right? Okay. They still got brothers, sisters, girlfriends, cousins, uncles. Who's to say one of their relatives or friends doesn't drive by or come visit and, what? Are you all really living with a coon? Is that? Who's to say? Like, it's so many problems that white people can cause, and in such short order, it is exponentially magnified when you live with them. We already have no sanctuary. That's a whole book, but man, it's not. This is not just one white person. This is two young white men and a non-white person with a white parent. I don't really see any upside to that. Like, I guess that's all I can say. The person said they already advised, so we were tasked with just offering tips and suggestions on staying safe, which I think we did. But, man, I do not see any upsides to this unless, like, this is a spectacular apartment and you're going to get lots of room and it's right next door to all the resources on campus that you need and other amenities. Like, there's a grocery store, like, right upstairs. Like, you could keep your footies on and go to the grocery store. Like, it would have to be an amazing set. Like, if that is not the case, if there is no other option, I just, like, it's not even one white person. It's like, this could literally be like a whole house full of white people. That might be what you end up coming home to, literally, one day. Like I said, the Super Bowl, if we get there, right, you all are coming in January, so if the Super Bowl happens, are you telling me they're not going to have a Super Bowl shindig and not have, you know, their white pals over to the house? Really? Even their white gal friends, you know? If it's three of them, that could be them and then their three white girlfriends want to come over and watch the game or hang out. I don't see an upside to it. I guess that's all I can say. Like, man, if there was any way, if it was a Rona-related thing, like, we don't even need to be there. I can stay at home and do all my work online. Great. I don't need to be there. Thanks for offering, but I'm cool. Like, I don't really see an upside to it, and I would be extremely dubious that you have found two white people who do not consume alcohol who are college-age students. Like, wow. That is, I mean, if that is the case, like, whoa. That is on the scale of, like, struck by lightning, Rona immunity pellets, albino squirrel. Like, wow. Two, not one, but a pair of white roomies who are college age, who don't drink, and other narcotics. Like, that would, like, it can't just be they don't drink, we do, you know, speed and cocaine, and all that. Like, that's not, like, they're totally about sobriety. Like, wow. Amazing. The number is 720-716-7300, the code 564-943-pound. Press star 61 if you would like to participate. If this helps, because a lot of folks participated in helping this young student last week, so if this helps with any clarity about the situation. If I recall correctly, I think retired firefighter Mr. Blue, a number of folks were like, ugh. They felt the same way, like, I am not feeling this living arrangement, and now getting more information, I am not feeling this living arrangement at all. Like, two thumbs down, you know, Yeah, two thumbs down. You'll have to let us know how it goes. Maybe we were wrong and, you know, advising you incorrect. I would have to hear more details about what the upside on all of this is. Like, living with potentially three white people, like, the benefit of this is there a hot tub? Is there, like, you'd have to hook me up with some more details about what makes this such a cool situation. Folks who dialed in, if you have your own situation, totally fine. Certainly, if you have tips, suggestions, that would be helpful. Speed dial. We need that. Be the first person on the line. Folks who dialed in, let's see. Launch should be open. Feel free.
Can I be heard?
Retired firefighter? Yes, sir.
Greetings, Gus. Greetings to everyone. I don't think I understood that he was offered a position to move in with the other guys. Had that been me, or my advice would have been to politely turn it down. You know, and just left it at that. I had a report, and it's basically is a somewhat of a clinic on those who aspire to have more authoritative positions in their workplace. The higher you, well, the more responsibilities that you have, a non-white person has on a job, the more crucial it is, the more observant your employer is going to be to you. If you have some sort of loose ends on your work performance, my advice would be to work on shoring all of that up, because you're going to be more and more examined on a daily basis. In this particular case, two employees that were ranked employees, I'm talking about law enforcement. Once again, Broward Sheriff's Office. I'm just going to read it right quick. I don't think the article is really that long. If you didn't know already, the director of the Broward Sheriff's Office is a black male. I think it's important to know he also is married to a white female. In Broward County, that person is not only the police chief, he also oversees the greater confinement facilities in the county of Broward County. And I mention that because it's related to this particular situation. The subject is BSO Fires Department of Detention Colonel and Lieutenant Colonel after inmate gave birth in jail. Broward Sheriff Gregory Tony has fired a Department of Detention Colonel and Lieutenant Colonel after an inmate gave birth in jail last month. The colonel is a black male. The lieutenant colonel is a black female. Tony announced the terminations of Colonel Gary Palmer and Lieutenant Colonel Angela Neely Thursday for command level failures, the department said in a news release. The firings follow an administrative review of a late September incident in which a female inmate in the infirmary at the North Broward Bureau gave birth to a child. The release said an investigation revealed that medical staff attended to the inmate when she delivered the child and that the mother and child were transported to a nearby hospital. But the Broward Public Defender's Office told the Sun Sentinel, the woman was forced to give birth in her cell. I conducted a review of the matter and determined that command level failures occurred by Colonel Palmer and Lieutenant Colonel Neely. In this case, Tony said in a statement, they grossly failed this agency and this inmate. At a news conference Friday, Tony thanked the public defender's office for raising concerns. I can tell you I'm highly disgusted at the allegations we're looking at right now, Tony said. Tony said an internal affairs investigation has been initiated to determine the actions of detention deputies as well as medical staff of WellPath, the health care provider for the jails during the incident. Yes, as I mentioned before, also, you know, in his position as the CEO of an organization, one of the characteristics, as I would say most of us know, of getting hired as the head of a department as a black person is to do the very thing that this article indicates, is fire black people without impunity. I would not tell a non-white person to do not take a position, but just keep in mind, as I mentioned before, keep in mind that you're going to be examined on a much more concise basis, a much more deliberate basis daily. So, you know, keep on your studies about what your job is demands for you to do. And, you know, it's a constant thing that you're going to have to do, because if not, you can easily get yourself in some serious trouble. And in turn, if the CEO of the job is a black person, then and you get yourself in some trouble, it's going to be pretty bad in a lot of cases. I mean, it'll be that way with a white person also, but don't think just because of a black person in that position that something is going to be a little bit more better. It's more than likely is not. And that's my report. That just took place, I think. It just made the news anyway today. As I think the article said, it took place in September, the incident itself. But he made the decision final, I think, today. And that's my report. Thank you.
Much obliged, retired firefighter. If anything, we have, if I heard the report correctly, and certainly we've talked before, there seems to be a long legacy of black people being hired, and that is going to be one of your primary duties. We will hire you. You are the first Negro supervisor, CEO, vice president, whatever it is, and your primary job will be to yell at, fire, reprimand, curse out other black employees, and we will check on you every 15 minutes to make sure that that is happening promptly. To not be surprised about that sort of thing. We talked about that for many, many years for the non-white person, I guess, who got in some sort of trouble, was fired in this case. Man, we have talked about also for a long time having a code about sexual intercourse and any sort of allocations of sexual misconduct, particularly now, really any time, but particularly now. Wow, like that's what you can expect, and maybe even criminal charges to boot. You might be lucky to just be terminated in the environment that it is now. So I've said for a long time, it's no sexual intercourse with coworkers. This wasn't even that type of thing. They have rules about, you know, sex with inmates or whatever it is, people that you're supposed to be charged with their custody. But even coworkers, I've said, no hanky-panky, as they call it, because that can go awry many times and lead to the same thing where you end up being terminated or criminally charged. Both having some sort of sexual code is extremely critical to counter racism and just functioning in the workplace. I thankfully had some people who they didn't give me information about counter racism code in the workplace, but they at least said, oh, no dating in the workplace. That can go bad in about a million different ways. I have I put it this way. I'm not aware of any non-white people where them engaging in sexual activity with anyone else that they worked with, where that ended up being a boon for their career. Like, man, they got raises, promotions, this, that, and it. Like, everything took off once they had started having sexual intercourse with this person on the job. Now, that is totally excluding the years of rape and terrorism white people have inflicted on non-white people. Not the same at all. Not talking about rape. Talking about consensual. We are both willing, agreeing participants in this, where that ended up being a boon for their career. I'm not aware of that. I can think of way more examples of problems, chaos, somebody even lost a job in something like just have a code about sexual conduct. And it should be, I do not, under any circumstances, engage in sexual activity with anyone that I work with in any capacity. Period. If this person is that cool, like, wow, this is my soulmate, this is the person that I've been dreaming about, that I'm supposed to be with for the next 60 years, well, cool in the game. One of us needs to work on that resignation letter immediately. And that's what I would be doing. Like, no, you cannot talk to anybody that you work with. Just that's what you can expect right there. What we just heard. Have a code about that sex thing in the workplace. Let's see. Much obliged, retired firefighter. Other folks who dialed in, if you have a hand up, commentary to share, line should be open. Proceed.
Can I be heard?
Bay Area Mob, yes, ma'am. Good to hear from you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thanks for taking my call. Greetings, everyone. So I didn't know there was all this and with him. Yeah. So last week he, yeah, mom, thinking about getting an apartment. I'm going to send you a picture last week. So, Now, mind you, he's going to Arizona 6 days to his dad. So he's here with me. No burden, no bother. He doesn't have to go anywhere, right? He wants to go to his dad because it's pandemic, and so his dad can hang out with him because he doesn't. He's never available, particularly the way his life is set up with the music. He doesn't have time. So his dad, poor dad. So his dad really, because he lives in another state, he didn't get to spend as much time with him because Tyler doesn't have time. So anyway, I did not approve of this. He is, I guess, an adult. I don't know what he's thinking. He sent me a picture of the place. I didn't like it. So, of course, I don't like it. I don't like, well, where are you going to? Who are these people? Two white, I don't know how many, more than one white person. He didn't say one of them was white with a non-white parent. So he must identify with white, this other party. Or he must, you know what I mean? He's not claiming that other nationality like he is white, I'm sure. So I did take pictures. I'm going to look the people up when I put it together because this is a lot for me as well, right? So he's doing whatever he's doing in there with his on the phone, whatever, however they communicate, and they're all, I guess they all do whatever they do and double major this, all this stuff, and you know, none of them drink, of course, none of them do anything wrong. They're just we're all going to school here, you know, and it's more, less expensive than renting an apartment is less expensive, so he states, than paying for the dorm. He wants to be out there because I guess he probably already wanted to go, just be somewhere different, I guess. And I don't think he's registering it because he's still a teenager. He's only 19, so I don't think he's registering it like we are. So, oh, it's awful. So, and then he's so quick with it. So he's already paid for the deposit. He's already wired the deposit money. I think this was yesterday. So today he needed me. So he's not saying everything. Everything just happens on the spot. So he wired the money. Okay, wait. So I'll bring it back. The parents. So the parents got involved real quick once the they got this place because the rent was high. Rent is like maybe $5,500. It was some ridiculous price. Four bedroom, one small room. So I was like, which one are you going to be in the small room? And I guess whoever has the least amount of stuff. He's really not, he's not looking at it like me. So the parents got in, so they sent emails. We found this. Somebody helped him find. So there's somebody on foot out there looking, doing the actual work. And everybody's from different states. One is from California, one of the people. I don't know. So I go to, he tells, ask me, can I take him to the UPS store? Or do I want to go with him? So I guess I figured he just needed a ride. No, I need to go with him because I need to co-sign for this apartment. So, all right, co-sign. So I just told him, don't call me. This was last week, though, because I was very, 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 very livid. I told him, don't call me. And then he said he was going to talk to you. I asked him, did he talk to you? But I didn't inquire on anything. He just responded, and that was it. I didn't say, what did he say? You know, I didn't do any of that. And I guess I see what happened. I didn't know. But thank you guys for all of that. That was cool. He needs that. So, yeah, he's kind of spacey with it, I guess, too. And then the kind of his environment with them, you know, because he went to the music, just the whole thing, the classical jazz, all that, I don't know. So I don't think he, outside of music and him being the, oh, you're so great, you know, because when he's around those kind of people, because he's so great, he doesn't see the, he only saw one time that I know of that I saw. And that was when last year he did jazz camp, and he reached to shake the guy's hand, whomever the host, the person on the mic's hand, and he looked at his hand like, just beat it. So he didn't shake his hand. So I was like, and I'll never forget that, and I make sure he doesn't either. But other than that, he doesn't, because he has that different, because when they see him, it's, hey, you know, kind of like, because he's like the star of the show. So he doesn't get it yet. So I don't know. I'm so scared. It's awful for everything you guys said. That's what I said. But I should have had a DJ behind me. I just, because I was living. So that's why he doesn't doing it in pieces, because he already has his mind set, and his dad's like, oh, no, yeah, I think that's a good idea. How are you going to pay for it? And, you know, so he saved his money. He has a job. He's a tutor for, I guess, college students. And, I don't know. Help, guys. Okay, that's it. I wanted to tell my story because the story is, thank you. Okay, I'll mute my line.
Much obliged for sharing. Our Bay Area mom, say it all the time, being an attempted parent in the system of white supremacy is so hard, especially it seems so challenging to get both parents where they have similar views, similar understanding of racism, white supremacy, so that you have a unified voice saying, oh, yeah, this is crazy. you know, like you shouldn't, or at least reconsider, as opposed to you saying, oh, I don't know, I don't think this is a safe situation, and his attempted father said, oh yeah, this is great. Like, that is very common in the system of confusion. There's a reason Mr. Fuller has that on page one. If you don't understand the system of white supremacy, racism, what it is, how it works, everything else will confuse you if you do not understand what it means to be classified as white. You will find yourself in many dangerous situations. This is one, potentially living with three individuals classified as white. I don't know if he knows about Jimi Hendrix, if he has some time to read between now and then. I'm not giving out advice or what have you. I'm just sharing a thought. Jimi Hendrix, Seattle. They should have the airport named after him. But he was an incredible musician, and many, many white people were jealous of him. We talked about him before, and tragic demise, lived with white people, tragic demise. Lots of examples of that. I mean, sometimes you have to learn the hard way, as they say. I think with this, though, like, I can totally understand being a young person and wanting to get out and explore. And, I mean, this is the time you're supposed to be doing all of that. But, like, for so many reasons, like, this is not that time. And they have said, like, young people have kind of had a difficult time, like, grasping that. Like, this is not that time. For kicking it, going out, maybe even for being there at all. Like, if it's remote, like, I would seriously consider, I'm going to stay home and kick it. And yeah, it is a bummer. I'm a young, brilliant musician and handsome young fella and could be out having a blast and, you know, doing my thing in Boston. I've never been there before, other side of the continent. But I mean, with the Rona and everything else, I don't know. The rent is kind of high too. Now getting that extra bit of information, like, that would be another component to have potentially, at minimum, this is two white people, one non-white person with a white parent, at minimum. This could be potentially three white people, but either way, to have them come to me, a black person, and they're staying in a $5,000 spot. Oh, yes, we want you to be a roommate. Yes, yes, yes. Like, really? Really? Like, if we're splitting that equal, like $12.50 a piece, like, I don't know, like, you really can't find another location in the $12.50 range where you do not have to be in a residence with potentially three individuals classified as white, at minimum two. Like, yeah, that would be lots of red flags for many, many reasons. Yeah, we had a different person. They heard all this from last week, so they wrote in. On the last broadcast, the younger non-white victim that is moving in with the potential roommates in Boston asked advice. Simply declare to yourself and all others a code of what you will do, what you won't do, what you will say, and what you won't say, and how you will respond to opposition to said code. Very important. That's why I said when he said might, when they were talking about guests coming over, that's why I said, like, even if these were non-white people, that would still be a red flag. Like, young people tend to, you know, be a little immature, be irresponsible. Like, we came to get rowdy. We came to do underage drinking and all the rest of it. So if it's we might stick to not having people over, I could easily, like I said, the Super Bowl is going to be here before we know it, and I could easily see that devolving into 10 people are over, even if everybody's girlfriend comes over. Like, this is not really the time that I would want that sort of situation. Like, and it's been these type of situations, they said, that have been the super spreaders on many, many college campuses, young people acting a fool, hanging out, particularly young white people, and I can say that explicitly because we just had the report about the HBCUs, specifically in North Carolina, low rates of COVID-19 because they are taking it seriously. That has not been the case for white-dominated college campuses. They've been doing beer pong, shots off of each other's navels, and all the rest of it. I just don't, for many reasons, and if I were a 19-year-old, I probably wouldn't be hearing that either, because most of the 19-year-olds have not been hearing that. They have been out, except they said the folks at the HBCUs, sterling job. But, yeah, I probably wouldn't be hearing that either. He was talking about potentially cooking with these white people, which would lead me to believe he does not suspect them of being racist. I guess you can just give us the report if this is, you know, already a done deal, which is kind of what it sounded like last week. You kind of affirmed that, like, you know, hopefully we are wrong. You know, these will just be the best, coolest fellas ever, and they will be responsible. They will stick to not having folks over and taking the Rona thing seriously and not tampering, being responsible. But at minimum, maybe he can report back, let us know about his experience. How do you know how long this thing is supposed to last? Is this a 1 year thing? Is this a 6 month thing?
Yes. No. 1 year.
1 year.
1 year, January.
Okay. Oof, what a time to be in a 1 year agreement, but okay. Yeah, that'll be, maybe we can get like a biannual report. So maybe he can let us know in, I don't know if I could wait till June. Maybe we can get one like at spring break. Maybe when they do spring break, we can get a report then somewhere in the March, April region. And then we can get a summer update, and then we can get one more. So we could do three. Maybe we can get three updates through the course of the year just to hear how things are going. Hopefully we'll all be wrong. We can all eat lots of crow when we get to the end of 2021. Mom will be a sucker. Gus will be a sucker. These are the greatest white people ever. They make Jane Elliott and John Brown look like racists. These are the best white folks ever. And even my, you know, mixed race roommate has been spectacular. You know, we've cooked great things. I've been safe, nothing harmed, and it's a great, comfortable spot. Enjoy Boston. Like, if that's what he says at the end of next year, two thumbs up. We still gave out advice. Wow, what a time. Did any other folks, any thoughts on our young scholar situation before we move on?
Can I be heard?
Retired firefighter who does have offspring, attempted father.
Yes, just a belated thought. The person that we're talking about is how old? 18, 19?
I think
19.
Yeah.
19, okay. Okay. Well, I see as a rule, you as a parent, you know, you do what you do. But as a parent of a 24-year-old, and also myself, my own experiences, I wouldn't even be thinking about an apartment as a he would be an incoming freshman.
No, he's what is that?
Sophomore.
Sophomore. He's a sophomore now. Yeah, so he's a sophomore. So he just left when the pandemic hit. They sent him back from Boston. So he was in Boston. He got stuff in Boston. It's a mess. I'll push mute. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Okay, because what I was thinking, that I wouldn't even be thinking about an apartment or anything like that until. The student, including myself, when I was a student in college, wouldn't even think about apartment, and maybe if I'm a senior. The reason why I say that is because, you know, freshman and sophomore especially, you know, it's a beginning situation, and it's enough on that student's plate as far as the academics are concerned. To have the focus, you know, on that, by being in a dormitory, some of the pressures and responsibilities to be taken off of the student. by the bill already being paid, you know, along with the process of the academics being paid for. So they have to worry about payments and from that standpoint. And, you know, a lot of the things that someone would have to be concerned about by being in an apartment, a private apartment away from the campus, as opposed to a dormitory on campus, they won't have to be concerned about. But I could see it as a senior, because that's like a precursor to quote unquote adulthood, you know, literally on your own, that type of thing. That's just me. I would have had that for my offspring, but he happened to be in a situation to whereas the campus that, and matter of fact, he's there right now, is only about maybe 20 minutes away from the house he grew up in. So, you know, he's basically here with me as far as that concerned. But my thoughts would have been not even thinking about an apartment until that person is a senior, or if they were in graduate school, you know, in grad school, something like, you know, as far as that concerned. But, you know, I would say first and foremost, though, besides or whatever I'm thinking about, being that he has a parent or parents that are observant on what he's doing, that is I would say probably more than enough that's needed. There's a lot of young people that don't have what he has with you and I'm assuming dad also. I didn't hear anything about it, but I'm assuming dad also. So, you know, that's cool. All right.
Hopefully we can, this will be like a counter-racist project. Maybe this will be helpful to some younger black people, way we can get some of the younger listeners to be of aid, because it seems like a lot of college-age black people end up having problems with racism. Remember Thomas in New York? He reported, this was earlier this year, on the compensatory call-in, he said that his daughter, she's in school, I think in the D.C. area, and her white, they're not even in an apartment, they're in the dorm, her white hallmate accused her of getting frying pans and banging them on the door and threatening her at like 2 o'clock in the morning or something. And so they had to go to talk to, I think, the white head of residential staff or whatever it is, the white person who kind of resolves these sort of conflicts in the dorms. And he said that he looked at the video camera and no such thing happened. And he said that, oh, yeah, this happens on a regular basis where somebody comes in and lies and said that, oh, yeah, the Negro with the skillet threatened me about noise. I said, do what? How common is that? Woo! I could not stop laughing then. Like, what? Like, that is a part of the racist code? Like, accused Negro of threatening me with the skillet. Like, and they've heard that one another. Oh, yeah, the Negro with the skillet. Well, yeah, we've heard this one. Woo! But, I mean, I'm laughing, but, I mean, that is the commonality, how regular it is to have these sort of tacky racist experience with white people where you are in living quarters in a college university setting. Like, it is super common and can be dangerous. That young lady, the black female, where she was being called Jamaican Barbie, and like I said, the white woman stuck her toothbrush in her rectum and all the rest of it. Like, she got sick. She had been doing all this terroristic stuff, chemical and biological warfare, and unbeknownst to her, the victim for a long time. So, I mean, it can be really – that young black male, they put a bike lock. They tried to choke him to death. They put a bike lock around his neck. We'll call him three-fifths and the rest. I mean, it can end up being a really – dangerous situation. So at minimum, I think it's great to have a code. I think it's great to, it is better safe than, so that is a lifelong lesson. Better safe than sorry. Wear that seatbelt every time. Better safe than sorry. best to not have white roommates at all. That is better safe than sorry. I mean, if you gotta be in that sort of arrangement, better safe than sorry. You're gonna have an ironclad code to keep yourself safe. And just about black self-respect in terms of what type of behavior is gonna be tolerated. In the era of the Rona, man, I would really stick to the no guest policy because that can get really out of hand. They say they don't drink. Okay, no problem. But I have seen that get out of hand for lots of reasons. I spent time in college where it can be baseball game, the Super Bowl, video games, Call of Duty, got one of those shoot 'em up game. Any reason for us to get together, a large group, and of course, drink. I mean, whew. Shots, it's all, oh, don't need an excuse to do shots. So, I mean, yeah. All you can do, offer suggestions, and like I said, hopefully we'll get a report, maybe three. That's the goal. We can get one in March, April. That's kind of the beginning. See how it's going. We'll get one in June, 6 months in, and then we can get either a concluding report when it's all done or something around like October-ish. To hear how things are at the kind of 75% point. So I'll be looking forward to it. If anybody else has any tips or suggestions, you can share this evening or you can email in and I'll forward them along. At least he listened. He wrote back and said he listened to all the suggestions. So our young scholar was grateful. And, yeah, we will look forward to getting reports on how things are proceeding. I'll get in one other email, and then we'll check in with other folks who dialed in. My email again, untiljustice@gmail.com. Non-white female, victim of racism, writes in, I am unsure if this would constitute as racism, but surely when white people get together, someone will be mistreated. Now, in my opinion, our young scholar, you've already got a group of white people together because it's two white people living there. I don't know if they're like brother and sister or they've been homies since kindergarten, but two white people and then a non-white person with a white parent. So when white people get together, someone will be mistreated. I wrote before about my bad schedule. When I took this job, I did not have a set schedule. I was told it varies, but they asked you how many hours per week you wanted to work. I originally wanted 37 hours a week, and when it wasn't busy, they would drop everyone down to 30 if you are full-time. So once things started picking up, I told them I was okay with 37 hours a week. So I guess the other members on my team had a meeting with the manager and were able to secure the better shifts, 8 to 3, 9 to 4, 8 to 1, etc. I had no idea my horrible shift, 10 to 7, would stay until the duration of my contract, and not only that, my hours weekly only increased to 40 just to cover the other members with the better schedule. So now they all get to end their day early, and or the work they couldn't complete would have to be done by the two CTs, who contact tracers, who have to remain until 7, which is extremely overwhelming. Tell me about it. I know there is some mistreatment going on because the other members who used to work the horrible shifts were never as excited or perky when they entered the chat room, but now it's all these emojis and motivational quotes. I also spoke to another employee outside of work, and she had the same thoughts. We talked about this with scheduling, like, and I mean, just looking at that where your day can end at 4, your day can end at 3, or your day ending at 7 p.m. Like, what? What kind of work day is that? Like, and that particularly now, like, I wouldn't like that even if it was July or what. I wouldn't like it under any circumstances. But now that it's going into the winter months, when it, at least here in Seattle, if it's overcast, it gets dark by December. It's dark at 2:30 in the afternoon if it's overcast here. I guess if you're in a regular location, okay, it's still going to be dark by 4 or 5. So, I mean, You're leaving at 7 p.m. Come on. We've talked about this where you get those ridiculous schedules where the people that are in charge, we talked about this, the caller in Florida at the courthouse talked about this, as have many others. Who is in charge of scheduling? How often is it that a black person, Al Sharpton, is in charge of the schedule? Who is going to work, how many hours you're going to have, that sort of thing, who's going to be furloughed, how frequently is it that a black person is making those decisions? System of white supremacy racism. No, and particularly she said she was able to talk to some other employees and was seeing similar patterns, and they were having similar thoughts about, you know, who got these great shifts and why they would be all excited online and what have you. Context of white supremacy. Much obliged. Let's see. The number again, 720-716-7300. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Other folks, dialed in. If you have a hand up, line should be open. Proceed. Some of the folks are spectating. Not sure if they're waiting to get to a spot where they can speak again. Now, if we have folks who are spectating and things are just going smashing for you in the work environment, all of your promotions, COVID-19 has not been a problem. You have all of the personal protective equipment you need. They distance on the job. They don't come up and high-five you and chest bump you and all that. They don't even come up and gossip, you know. If you need to be at home, work remotely. Get your. We do have some Cows listeners who are in that number. They have been set up. The company bought them laptops and everything, like whatever you need. You are set to go. Want to make sure everyone is safe. Bravo. If you are in that number, I hope it remains that way for the remainder of your time in the workforce and only gets better. Like you get a better office and, you know, get to work fewer hours for greater pay. It just improves each month as you go along. Feel free to invest racism-notes.blogspot.com. Listener supported counter racist radio. Got one computer replaced, looking to replace my other, and I will be all solid. So much obliged to the folks who have invested. If your work situation is that stable and you've gotten lots of raises this year, you're in the group, folks like Amazon and such, where this year has been a banner year thanks to the Rona. Well, there you go. Invest. And you can tell us how you accomplished that. Like, how did you pull that off? Give us some tips so some other folks can improve their workplace situation as well. Let's see. I'll get in one more email while folks are getting their thoughts together. Let's see. Oh, we got more advice for our young listener right on time. Okay, so this is a different black female victim of racism writing in. She says, some advice for the young scholar before he decides whether or not to move into the shared accommodation. He already made the decision. He should take photographs of every item in his room before he moves in and when his arrangement ends, before he finally leaves. This way, he has evidence of how he left the state of the accommodation in case anyone tries to charge him for damage, which happened to my offspring. That's why I said that's... I am not a parent. I thought we should probably have some listeners who have had to give this speech before or have seen, you know, what can happen. So, excellent recommendation. That's why I said, I don't know, are these white people that are coming there, do their relatives own this property or, you know, who the realty is? Excellent suggestion there. Secondly, I've included the link to an article. This is a New York Times report from October. I'll post the article. It's from the New York Times. I posted a link to an article that I think will be interesting to the Cows audience. In summary, it is a disingenuous report about the former black CEO of Credit Suisse who was racially abused and discarded after he made the bank financially viable again, disregarding the fact that the author seems to suggest that racism doesn't happen in the U.S. and that the mistreatment is unique to the Swiss. I learned a new term which you and others may already be familiar with, the glass cliff, used with reference to a situation in which a woman, there it is, a white woman, or a man, see, let me read it the way they got it, so, used with reference to a situation in which a woman or a member of a minority group ascends to a leadership position in challenging circumstances where the risk of failure is high. I have heard of this term before. They have glass ceiling, glass cliff, lots of metaphors. It has to be white women. You could just say member of minority group. The only reason for having women there is white women or members of a minority group. But anyway, glass cliff, yes. This is apparently a well-used racist strategy that the article also suggests is used against women. Subtext, white women, said like a brilliant scholar. I believe this is a lie or happens rarely and is probably driven by other factors, personal conflict, rather than gender discrimination. There are many other lessons in the article, some new and others which have already been raised on the Neutralizing Workplace Racism broadcast, such as living modestly, not letting racists know how financially comfortable you may be. We talked about that last week. You cannot be bragging about what you have. Ooh, I just got a brand new MacBook Pro. Ooh, I just got a new Corvette. Ooh, we just took a vacation in Italy for the last week. None of that. All of that is grounds to get you in trouble. And if the New York Times has an article that's even halfway suggesting it, oh, yeah, make sure you are never, ever, ever brag. I said I would dress super modest. I wouldn't have gaudy jewelry. I said I would wear about the same thing. I would not wear anything to attract attention. I would never be complimented about clothing because I would wear basically the same thing. I said that I would have probably five shirts, the same shirt, five pair of slacks, the same pair of slacks. So it just looks like you wear the same thing all the time. Exactly. I am not dressing to impress. It's like my uniform. I'm not going here to look cute and cool. Clean, I'm professional, I'm ready to roll, but oh no, this is not my, you know, my Brooks Brothers suit, and not for that at all. Let's see, the number 720-716-7300, the code 564-943-pound. Press star 61 if you would like to participate. Other folks with commentary.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Hello? Okay. Today I showed up for my place of so-called work. And part of my work contract is that we clean the general area that we work in and keep it... you know, at a general maintenance level, they have a cleanup crew that comes one day a week, I guess. Cleaning lady, as she was called. But today, when I go in, the bathroom is overflowing. I had told the previous non-white black male who was told he was the camp director, whatever that means, but told him that I didn't do bathroom cleanups. Because, number one, I'm not trained to do so, and that's something that should be taken care of by those who get paid to do bathroom cleanups and deal with human waste in that area of the business. So I go in today, and this is about 2 months ago, I tell him, and there's floating water coming out of the bathroom. definitely, sure enough, the toilets have been overflowing. And there's, of course, a fecal matter in the water. So I'm not going in to walk through it. I send a, and it's 5:30 in the morning. I send a email to the new general manager, white male, that he has a problem with the plumbing. Toilets overflowing. 3 hours later, I'm about to leave for the final time. I've come and gone to this place twice to work, and problem's still not handled. As I go to punch in, another suspected racist white male comes up and tries to walk within 2 feet, and I firmly yelled over my shoulder, "Stay back, keep your distance, stay back. Corona, COVID, stay back." I almost say Corona. COVID, stay back. And he stopped and backed up to the appropriate 6 feet. And I took my time, punched in, and then I turned around. And, "What is it?" And he, "Yeah, the bathroom is overflowing and the water's coming out." And I said, "I'm not a plumber." And I walked over to teach my class. And he kept talking. "Hey, all you got to do is go under there." He told me how to fix it. And I believe it was just self-respect, black self-respect. That's not what I do. And that's not what you pay me for. That's some salary work or some professional plumber work. And that's all. I believe it was workplace racism. I believe that since this place is 24-hour surveillance, including the on the iPhone watches, they know what's happening in the place. They're just seeing if I would handle their business, even though I'm not paid to do so, which I refuse to do so. Thank you. That's all.
Job well done. Black self-respect. I agree 1,000%. Plumbers are paid very well, unless I have been misinformed. They're not Bill Gates, but I mean, that is like unionized work. Like, that is not cheap. Anybody, if you have plumbing issues or what have you, that has to be resolved. I mean, if the toilets are just overflowing on a regular basis, you have a plumbing problem. Like, let's get this permanently resolved, and particularly in the era of the Rona, like, that cannot be good to have waste overflowing in a professional facility. So, I mean, let's get a plumber in to resolve the situation as opposed to, "Oh, yes, Negra, yes, go in there and just dig through the poo. It's no big deal. You can get that taken care of for it." Come on. Come on. Come on. Black self-respect. I think that sort of thing happens on a regular basis where it'll be, that term was used. That freaking book case is so terrible. Like, I have to go back and look at some of the terminology used. But the notion that black people can be compelled to do any sort of labor, particularly something that's going to be grueling, like, yeah, go in there and, you know, mop the floor, dust the floor. I think we've had some folks even call in before where they've been asked, like, take out, it was Emmy. She said that. It was a white guy that she worked with, and this is professional setting. She's in looking to get in med school and what have you. In their white lab coat and all this, we're professional and doing our studies and things. "Hey, Emmy, do you mind taking out the rubbish bin?" "Am I on the janitorial staff? Like, what?" Not, no disrespect to them, but that's not my job. That's not what I'm paid to do. And if it was another white person here, my same title, we're in the same position, are you going to get that white person to go dump the trash? Are you going to get another white person? Do you think you can go in there and dodge the fecal matter and get that plumbing problem corrected? Come on, man. Black self-respect, sir. The number again, 720-716-7300. Let me read this report since she emailed it. Let's see what this is. I stopped in the middle of the number. My apologies. 720-716-7300. The code 564-943-#. Press star 61 if you would like to participate. Let's see. The short tenure and abrupt ouster of banking's sole black CEO. Let's see. Tijan Thiem made Credit Suisse profitable again, but the Swiss rejected him as an outsider and a sudden scandal took him down. Is this a cowbell? Oh, no. Last November, Urs Rohner, the chairman of the board of Credit Suisse, had a party at a Zurich restaurant to celebrate his 60th birthday. Among the scores of friends, family, and business associates who gathered, attendees say there was a single black guest, Tijan Thiem, the bank's chief executive. The festivities had a Studio 54 theme with the 1970s costumes and hired entertainers. Mr. Thiem watched as a black performer came on stage dressed as a janitor. Come on! Come on! I shouldn't be laughing, but I mean, that's what I said. That's why they asked you, like, you're the niggers of the janitor. What's the problem? That's what the coon do. You go get... Yeah, anyway, so they had the entertainment, black-themed janitor, and began to dance to music while sweeping the floor. Mr. Thiem excused himself and left the room. His partner and another couple at his table, including the chief executive of the British drug company GSK, followed. Eventually, they returned to the party, only to be astonished again. A group of Mr. Rohner's friends took the stage to perform their own musical number, all wearing Afro wigs. Mr. Rohner declined to comment on the events, which were described by three guests. For Mr. Thiem, now 58, the party was just one in a series of painful incidents that shaped his 5 years atop Credit Suisse, when he was the only black chief executive in the top tier of banking. Some moments were shocking, others disturbing. Most had to do with tensions around being black in a predominantly white industry and an overwhelmingly white city. A tall, reserved, bespectacled polyglot, Mr. Thiem did the job he was hired to do. He made Credit Suisse profitable again after a long decline, but he never had to stop. Now, see? He never had to stop fighting for excess. That is poor writing. As someone who is a freelance author who has made thousands of dollars writing about racism, that is poor writing. You would just write directly. It was a constant battle for acceptance. That's clear. Not, but he never had to stop. Like, what? He never had to stop fighting for acceptance and respect, both within the bank and in Switzerland generally. At a shareholders' meeting, his background was denigrated as third world. A subordinate purchased the home next to his, which was taller and looked directly into Mr. Thiem's windows. The Zurich press rode him for not appearing sufficiently Swiss. I will stop there. We talked about this for a long time. He should listen to Neutralizing Workplace Racism. It's a big time difference in Switzerland, but I mean, you can learn a lot. They said that he made this Credit Suisse, he made them profitable again. That didn't matter. He had to consistently fight to gain acceptance. Why wouldn't it just be, we are profitable. You got us back in the black. Isn't that what they say? We got a black goon and they got us. They could make some tacky jokes about it. Nah. We are more comfortable. Dr. Eddie Moore Jr., cowbell, he said, the theory of incapability. Individuals classified as white, they cannot see us as a scientist, a CEO, a physician, a lawyer. You are a nigra. You're a coon. Like, I can see you with a broom. I can see you with a plunger. That's what I'm comfortable with. That's the way I'm comfortable thinking about you as a coon, as a nigra. With a clipboard. Directions? You're the head of a construction site? The head of... Come on. We don't see you that way at all. And then you just look at all the rest of it. The That last chunk right there, now we started this program talking about living with another white person, right? That's where we started. We talked about that last week. Now this here fella said that one of the subordinates purchased the home next to his, which was taller. That seems kind of Welsing. I got some inferiority about me. This coon isn't supposed to be, you know, in charge. I'm not. He is the subordinate. I dominate. I'm going to go get this big, tall house. Welsing moment. And it looked directly into Mr. Thiem's window. So I mean, what? That's what I mean. If you don't understand what it means to be white, you will find yourself in some very dangerous situations. Say it twice. Wow, I will stop there, but it is fascinating. The rest of the... Wait a minute. Oh, yeah, it's fascinating. You can go ahead and read the rest of it. It seems like this guy should be, you know, a credit to any company and a sterling member of our staff, and we're going to fight to keep him, and he's done so. He's made us a lot of money and all the... We've talked about those parties. Make sure I don't gloss over that. They had a black person come out, pretend to be a janitor. That's the entertainment. Woo! And then they had the other white people, they get up and did the blackface with the afros. We've said for years, it's holiday season is coming up, but hopefully the Rona will shut a whole lot of this down. That's one thing we can be super thankful with the Rona. No more parties with Negro janitors and white people in afros. Maybe we can get away from Thanksgiving, Christmas, Halloween, New Year's Eve, Rona. You don't have to say any Rona. Can't make it, Rona. Oh, man, sounds like fun, Rona. This is the most, I think Mr. Fuller said, it doesn't get any better than tacky. You end up at those parties, they get a little liquor. That's what you, they said he was astounded. If you listen to the cows, Mr. Thiem, you would not be astounded. You would have expect, oh yeah, we want, that's why I say, if you got to go, you feel like this is going to cost me my job if I don't go to the shindig. I'm going to be here for 30 minutes, and then as soon as I see the janitors, gotta go. I got a phone call. It's been so pleasant, Mr. Roan. I will talk to you later. Have a great evening. Oh, no, no. You've been too kind. We'll catch you all on Monday. Have a blessed evening. Blessed evening. Said that for you. And you bring somebody with you, too, so you have lots of means to excuse yourself permanently. Yeah, we got to roll. It's been grand. The number again, 720-716-7300. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. If folks are spectating for the remainder, then we will wrap up a little bit early and enjoy our Friday evening. Other folks have commentary, feel free.
Can I be heard again?
Greetings, retired firefighter.
Yes, sir. Just one more report I forgot about, but I think it's important. I think either you or somebody mentioned about the historical black colleges not participating in sports in this fall. If someone did bring that up, there is one historical black college that has attempted to participate in sports this fall, and it's about 10 minutes away from where I'm sitting at. The college is Florida Memorial University. They along with other fall sports, I think soccer is one of them, they just restarted their football program last to be done from 1958. They hired a guy that I have worked with professionally as a football coach, and have been knowing him for at least 30 years. And in turn, a disaster took place. There's a good reason why the other historical black colleges did not engage into participating into sporting events is because, number one, with the shortage of income that comes into those institutions, it can put the student population and the athletes who are students also in peril. And that's one of the reasons why they did not engage into sports. It's already complicated enough with students on campus. But to have sporting events, you have to have a certain amount of funding in order to make the environment as safe as possible. And I don't think that's equated with historical black colleges to be able to do that at the same rate, let's say, a University of Alabama or University of Florida has with the athletes as well as the facilities that students and everybody else uses on a higher rate when sporting events are going on. In turn, it was reported in a news article that I read that the reason why Florida Memorial made the decision to engage into fall sports is because of the possibility that it may upgrade the fall enrollment at the institution. So from there, in my opinion, they put the risk of employee personnel as well as the students in jeopardy for something like that, which I don't think is really worth it. And it ended up taking place. So in turn, I don't know how this took place because I haven't fully read the articles, but they suspended. They suspended several of the coaches. Now, I know for a fact with the guy that I know, he did not want to engage into the fall football season. He did not want to engage into it. But in turn, the university wanted him to. So, you know, in turn, it, as I mentioned before, it didn't work out well. And himself and several other employees they're not fired, but they, from my understanding, they are suspended indefinitely, including the cheerleading coach. I'm assuming all of them are non-white black employees. But yeah, that's my report on that.
Much obliged, retired firefighter. I had said it was the HBCUs. They were taking the virus seriously, and the reports came out that they were having very low rates of infections, at least on some of the North Carolina campuses, because they were taking it serious, and, you know, students were following the protocols and all that. But that's true, too. A lot of the HBCUs also shut down the sporting activities along the same lines. We're taking it safe, all precautions, and, you know, not going to put anybody at unnecessary risk for all of this. And that has been consistent in terms of the situation that you're reporting, and now some folks may be getting in trouble around this, trying to go ahead with the football situation, and even at the University of Alabama, which is one of the most storied college football programs, Nick Saban, suspected racist, got the Rona, they said. They reported he tested positive, and I believe one of his other staff members, and that jeopardized one of their big games. Alabama's, I think he might be the highest paid college football coach in the country, the continent. Millions of dollars, and he has the Rona. I think he might not even be able to be with the team for the sidelines. So that has happened repeatedly, professionally and at the college level. So Yeah, I can only say take it seriously. I played that report about snitching. And it's been a few reports of that where they've had these situations. And I'm not even talking about the NFL, where it's been like high school, college, where this is what they call amateur sports, where they've been reckless. And then the coach and all these other folks ended up getting the virus. It's like, really? Like, we're going out and risking brain damage and the Rona for what? We're not even getting paid. Like, why are we doing this? The high school level, for real, for like, why are we doing this again? Priorities. Why are we doing this again? The university level, like, oh, okay, he's Nick Saban. I make, you know, $10 million a year. Absolutely, we're doing this. Like, oh, okay, I get it. The universities, I get it. All the money and all that. But, I mean, wow. I can only say again, like, man, if I was an attempted parent, my offspring would not be involved in any athletics. Like, if you're going to have that type of flagrant disregard for my child's safety, particularly football, brain damage and all the rest of it, but out in the Rona and we still got to have Monday night football. Half the Tennessee Titans tested positive and we still got to have football. We just postponed the game. Like, come on, come on, come on. That is the system of white supremacy, racism. Snitch, I can only say it again. Snitch, you have to be the one that is responsible, concerned about your health and well-being. Because in a system of white supremacy, Rona or no, white people are not concerned about our safety at all. They're cracking jokes about us as the janitor. Let's see. Other folks who dialed in, if you have comments, observations to share, lines should be open. Proceed. Give folks a moment to get their thoughts together. We should be here tomorrow. The compensatory call-in, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. I stalled our Global Sunday Talk on Racism. I might wait a week. I stalled having all those computer problems and everything, so I was not right there like Monday. Like, let's do the Global Sunday Talk this weekend because I was still uncertain, but we should be able to broadcast, so maybe we'll just postpone. I'll ask the folks across the water if it would be better, less short notice, to just wait 1 week and do the global talk next week. It is Black History Month in the UK, so I always think it's cool to check in with those folks during so-called Black History Month just to see, you know, what that means across the waters, and especially in the year of the Rona, and this will be our last time checking in with them before the U.S. presidential election to sort of get their predictions and thoughts on that. So maybe we'll wait 1 week just so I can get stabilized and all that good stuff now that I feel like I can broadcast stably. Let's see. But we will be here tomorrow, compensatory call-in, Saturday, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. We'll review what has gone down the last week on the plantation as we inch closer towards the election, folks' thoughts, who they think is going to win, and all the rest of that. That'll be tomorrow, Saturday, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. Right on. Other folks who are with us, if you have comments, observations, suggestions to share, proceed. Not sure folks are still needing a few moments to get their thoughts, observations together. One thing I will share, not that this is sports, all about sports and all the rest of that, but I heard some of the professional basketball folks, they were, at first were being criticized about complaining about the so-called bubble that they had. I was just talking about with football and all the rest. They're just, you know, playing their games, empty stadiums or reduced fans and all that, with professional basketball. They were in Orlando and playing, I guess, at Disney World. They have a sports complex, so they just had all the games there. No travel, no fans, that sort of thing. Bubble, as they called it. But I heard lots of players complain. This was when it first started. I think Paul George, he's a big star, was saying, you know, hey, this has been kind of tough on my mental health. We're kind of stuck here and don't have our family here, our friends here that we would normally have. We can't go home. And then all this stuff is happening to black people, and the shootings and everything. Like, it's been kind of tough. And I heard a number of folks who just kind of said, and I don't want to hear it. You know, they spoiled rich athletes, and you're staying in Disney World. It's not like you're living out on a tent on the side of the road and then having to go play basketball. Like, I don't want to hear, you know, any of that nonsense about mental health. You know, shut up and play basketball again. And now that all of that is over, and I guess more of the players have stepped out to talk about the experience, and they started going into more details, I've heard lots of players complain about it, because I guess I didn't have a whole lot of sympathy at first either. And they started going, some of them had lists of things that were unpleasant about the situation, and one of the top, they said food was bad, and so they went into the details, because it would be assumed, like, you're in Disney World, you know, food's not going to be a problem and all the rest of it. And they said that they couldn't bring their chefs, most of these, you know, they're millionaires, so they couldn't bring their chefs, couldn't bring a team chef. And they said the first few weeks or so, this was not just a one day thing, that they didn't have adequate food, and they had players eating peanut butter sandwiches and, like, granola bars. I was just like, halt, stop right there. I'm so sorry for, you know, like, downplaying this and not having empathy for folks who are in a challenging situation. Like, I don't need to hear anything else. Like, if you would have put me in an environment where I do not have my Vitamix and I am left to fend for myself and the best that I can come up with is a peanut butter sandwich and granola bars, and this is going to have to go on for, like, weeks on end, like, oh my God, like, stop right there. Like I said, they had a list of things that were wrong or unpleasant about this experience. They said the food situation did finally improve, and they were able to get their chefs, so that got better. But they had a list of things. The bedding, lots. It was stunning in terms of, like I said, the COVID situation has caused so many problems in terms of the workplace environment and adjustments. And for some people, it's been good. They, you know, like I said, some of our Cows listeners, they got laptops and all these other goodies to, so that they can work from home and things will work out better and awesome, spectacular. But for many victims of racism, it has been a challenge almost from the beginning of the year all the way up to where we are right now. Anywho, try to be empathetic, I guess, all of that to say. Try to be empathetic, even if it seems like, if it's maybe a black supervisor or somebody who seems like they're in a pretty good position and things are going well, they make, you know, they get more compensation than you do, have a better office than you do. That might be, but we're still on the plantation, the system of white supremacy racism, so try to be mindful of that. It might be that you aren't seeing all aspects of that victim of white supremacy's experience, where it might look like things are not too tough or your situation is worse, or not comparing, but it might look like they're not being too terrorized. Man, you could be surprised if you get more details about, you know, what's happening in a specific situation. Anywho, let's see. Folks still spectating or need more time to get their thoughts together?
Can I be heard?
Greetings, caller in Florida. Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much, sir. Greetings to Gus, the host, the listeners and callers. I have some reports I want to share. My first report is I got an update on the victim of racism, black female, in a department across the hall, how they had this situation where they mainly had her down in the drive-thru at a greater ratio than two other white women. So it looks like the person who orchestrated this definitely a member of the clique, blonde hair, blue eye person. Apparently, it looks like somebody doesn't want the two of them working in the same area at the same time. But I'm thinking that's just another excuse for them to put her down at the drive-thru because the supervisor of the department wasn't in. This took place about like 2 weeks ago, and she came in on a Monday starting out a week where the supervisor wasn't there, so she had to go down to the drive-thru, and the assistant supervisor, which is the, you know, the main orchestrator, white person, she was there. So the reason I'm saying this is that it looks like she's still in some way getting the advantage. And my first, I'm hearing that my first boss, many reports of the past on the cows, he retired in 2016. He called up to the courthouse. Now, I don't know what it was for. I don't know, probably to warn him about me. but, yeah, I'm hearing that he called to talk to her specifically, and it seemed like it was a sincere conversation about something. That's just, you know, I guess somewhat speculation on that small part. But the black female, as I said, is pregnant, and she's been getting sick, all right, down and the drive-thru now. This building was made in the late 70s. So they just, as I shared before, they reopened this place. So she has to go down a flight of stairs. And that's obviously, you know, uncomfortable for a pregnant female. So a day came by where she was apparently throwing up, vomiting in a waste basket. And she sent an email to a person who's classified as white that works in the civil area saying, hey, you know, I'm sick. Can we get somebody down here? Right? Oh, I'm in court. Will Ford to blank the warden, right? So the end of the day, get there. And she has to go to the ER, right? She goes to the ER, so she ended up being dehydrated from all of the vomiting and getting sick. And that she approached the warden. She sent an email that, hey, you know, the supervisor was supposed to send you an email saying that I was sick. I need a replacement. Oh, well, I didn't get it, right? That's what she says. So, obvious racism being practiced, and I don't know if she sent it to the higher boss, but I'm suspecting that she's going to do that because she's already had to make a report on them before of her, you know, not getting her checklist to get promoted to the next level. So, it looks like they're starting to do the rotation better, but I'm thinking she shouldn't even have to be down there in the first place. So the warden has been very sly in her racism, which leads to my next report where she sends an email out saying, hey, you know, it's Sweet Tuesday. You know what that's implying, right? Sugary, pastries, cupcakes, you know, stuff that's bad for you. So they use that as a means to sidestep practicing racism and injustice. So this mass email gets sent out to the, you know, the civil area. And following that, she's bringing over all of the sweets and stuff like that. So in the email, now I'm thinking this could have been, you know, strategic or whatever. A clique member, the non-white person with a white parent, And also the person that approached me saying, what is the black equivalent of a Karen? That one right there through the water sends a response, reply all, saying, oh, thank you for the refreshments. We really appreciate that. That was something they set up, okay? That's my conclusion on that, because they work together and it's an extended click. So they did that to respond to the victim's report of being mistreated because she's black. All right. So the warden is walking around giving out a card for a person who had a loss in the family, but she used that to scout the area and look at the tension, the racial tension, as you know, what some people may call it. And a white male, met up with her, from what I'm hearing, and they were, it looks like some unjust networking. So they were talking under their breath about how to respond to, you know, the girl sending an email about being sick, and her lying saying that she didn't get the email. So they're trying to get their lie together. That's in my opinion. My next one is a black female victim of racism. She said that she was in an elevator and a magistrate confused her for somebody else. She said, do I know you? You work upstairs somewhere, right? She's like, no, I don't work up there. So she was sharing with me, she said, I guess she must have got me mixed up. And she also shared with me that, which I think is somewhat personal, but I try to stay away from these conversations. But she said that in a court hearing, the attorneys were treating her horribly. I guess, custody case she got with the father or whatever, but the way she's being perceived is someone who's low class, works at McDonald's, and she said that they look at her as ghetto trash or something. So I'm like, my goodness. I found an email. I've been going through my emails, building up more reports, and it's an email right from 2014 where my first supervisor, he logs on to a former coworker of myself, and it reads, I would just like to say I work for the best boss ever. He's loyal, kind, smart, wise, handsome, funny, very humble, generous, superb leader, and looks way longer than his age. So now, and the reason why I'm saying this is because there were tons of these emails, and this from 2014 now, years ago, where they would berate each other, they would insult each other for grammar and spelling errors. So, you know, like how he got handsome written out as H-A-N-S-O-M-E when he left the D out, and he says looks way longer than his age, younger than his age. So they criticize and make fun of each other in these emails, but I never, even at the time, while I was more confused, I never responded. But I saved these emails because I'm going to use them. All right. So they said, oh, no, tomorrow spelled like this. Handsome spelled like that. And then they will reply with everybody in it to humiliate and embarrass people. I have one more. There was one where the black male who is the court director now, right, he is in an email, another reply all email with the entire department, like 17 people in the email. He's replying to someone, a non-white person, saying that I'll bring myself. Like, they'll have in the initial email a list of things that people can bring. So it didn't have her name on it, but this person was in the email. So she replies saying, I'll bring myself, meaning I just want to eat, right? Black male replies and says, oh, make sure you bring a receipt in case you might have to exchange it. So capitalizing on some kind of metaphor right there. And that's all I have to share right now. Thanks for allowing me to speak.
Much obliged, caller in Florida. The scheduling, we talked about that this evening. We talked about it many times, but there we go again. With the, and whom is in charge of the schedule where it's reliably the black person gets the short end of the stick, as they say. We have an attempted black mom. Now, I mean, that's, you know, when they give out the statistics about maternal mortality rates, black moms having a difficult time during pregnancy because of white supremacy racism, I said I've seen this in my personal life, and there's just no reason for me to doubt that black moms are going to be terrorized. That's just the facts of white supremacy racism, what it is, how it works. Also, why you should have a pretty extensive plan about, you know, procreating and everything. But this black mom coming in, working, she's not a welfare mooch, you know, trying to stay at home and just have a bunch of babies. She's in. She's working. She's trying to do her job, and no sympathy whatsoever. She's sick and going through all this, and it's not, oh, my goodness, stay home. Work remotely. It's none of that. Oh, I didn't get the email. We can't even accommodate. Yeah, I didn't get the email. Yeah, you probably didn't even send it. Yeah, yeah, shiftless, yeah. I mean, I've worked with pregnant white women where they got help. They got assistance. You know, they were thought of as valuable, and the offspring that they are carrying, valuable. You know, we want to do every possible thing that we can to support you, you know, if it's adjusting meeting times or locations, or if you need time away, and, you know, anything you need, just let us know. What does it say? You hate you get, we got your back. Not the case with black moms to be at all. Not even close. I didn't get that. You'll have to, yes, just make do. Sweet day. We're in the middle of the Rona. They just had a report, I think it might have been in the New York Times as well, where they said that having excess weight can put you at risk for suffering greater harm from COVID-19 should you be infected. We talked about some of that before, obesity and COVID-19, although they weren't even talking about being obese per se. They just said, you know, having a little bit of extra weight above what would be healthy for your body range. And I just thought, wow, like, I've been saying that, talked about that at the Cal's yoga retreats. We just had Dr. Lathan on the program. I've said that on those jobs, any old excuse, they don't have kale day on the job, right? They don't have smoothie day on the job. They don't have let's drink a gallon of water day on the job, because water is so important. We have sweets day, donut day, pizza Friday, cheeseburger Monday, diabetes Wednesday. Like, that's what I said, man, get in that habit. I'm not eating. No, thank you. I'm good. Like, I don't get you. Cobbler, pot, I'm good. I would, like some of the folks who said, he has a reputation for not eating the food in the workplace. Absolutely. We got the Rona? Come on. Come on. Let's see. Scouting for racial tension. Now, white people are extraordinary. We talked about, you know, looking for nonverbal communication cues in the workplace, being mindful of your own nonverbal communication in the workplace as we're moving and talking. But, man, you talk about gathering information. White person in the workplace, they're going around with a card, no less. I'm just keeping you all under surveillance. see what's being talked about, what's the hubbub, how folks are feeling. Take the temperature of the room really quick as I do my assessment. Just use this old card here. Yes, oh yes, yes. Yes, Bob is leaving us, yes. What's going on? How you feeling? George Floyd got you down? I'm thinking, go and do my check. Yes, I've done my afternoon reconnaissance, and I think we're all right. No revolts planned. Things are working accordingly. Like, that is the sly white woman, master deceiver. Let's see. Now, the magistrate gets confused. This is another one of those that's cliche, where the magistrate doesn't quite remember. Which Negro are you? What department are you with? Do I know you? How'd you get in the building exactly? Like, come on now. Come on. It's not that many black people in the building. I do think that is a lovely effort when you can remain calm and answer the question. Do I know you? Yes, sir. You work here? Yes, sir. You have security pass? Oh, yeah. Yes, sir. Got my badge right there. Oh, okay. And we just move on, even though I make note now. We've been working in this building together for the last 4 years, and you don't know what department I'm in. Like. Okay, and we've heard a lot of examples of this. I think even Cynthia McKinney, six-term member of the U.S. Congress, she went to enter, I believe it was the Capitol building, going to do where this was when she was in office, and the security guard, like, I didn't recognize her. You know, you got to show your credentials and things, you know. How many years? Six-term elected congresswoman? You didn't recognize her? You didn't? Yes. Let's see. And then the other employee reported she felt like they see her as ghetto trash. Like.
Yeah.
I mentioned Dr. Eddie Moore today. I said, the theory and then capability. That was his first time visiting us way back in 2009. But that's kind of the essence of it. You know, it's not that you, we don't, I assume they don't just hire anybody at the courthouse, anybody just walking up and down the street, you know, one tooth and then, you want a job at the courthouse? Come on in. I assume that's not how it works in Florida. So, I mean, you went through everything. You had to be qualified to get this job, and you're not a valued member of the team. You're a piece of ghetto trash, and I mean ghetto trash, like, wow. It's that is the system of white supremacy again. What does it mean to be classified as white? I would have probably had, if I felt safe, man, I would have wanted more data. Like, how did you get to that conclusion? Like, a piece of ghetto trash? Like, what did they say to you specifically? Or how, you know, are they treating you specifically that would lead you to such a conclusion? Because, I mean, that is, wow. But, I mean, again, I'm not saying it's incorrect. Theory of incapability, at best, you're the janitor. The New York Times report, at best, you're the custodian. If not, you know, some crack peddling rapist. That's the best Obama could hope for. They had the pictures of him as a pimp of some sort, hustling watermelons. I mean, that's the best you could hope for in a system of white supremacy. I'm a ghetto piece of trash. Well, all right, at least they got a shot. Let's see if we can push on through our day here at the courthouse. Justice, that's what we're supposed to. I'll just leave that one. If that's how they think about the black people who work at the courthouse, they're ghetto trash. What do you think about the black citizens who just come to use the courthouse? Ghetto trash. That's another reason not to eat with my colleagues. I'm a piece of ghetto trash. Oh, you got fresh truffles? Let me get five. I'm good. I'm totally good. The number is 720-716-7300. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Other folks with us, if you have a hand up, proceed. saw some other hands. Folks, we have folks spectating. Look like we had new hands. Spectating while I give them a moment if they're well, we are almost at the end anyway, so we will be here tomorrow for the compensatory call in 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. As I said, I had computer problems. I was still having them early in the week, but have replaced one MacBook Pro, so much more stable now. I was not as sure at the beginning of the week, so I didn't send out the invite so we could get our Global Sunday Talk together for this Sunday. But now I'm thinking I waited, or it took so long for things to kind of stabilize. It might be better to just postpone that 1 week and do it the Sunday, next Sunday. And that way we can still get our overseas U.S. presidential predictions, COVID-19 lockdowns, which have been massive across Europe right now, like 9 p.m. curfew in Paris, like, woof. But, yeah, I thought it would be good to check in with them. So we'll see if we can do that next week. In addition to, you know, keeping an eye on everything else that's happening in between. Much obliged to all the folks who participated. Hope it was worthy of your time and energy for a Friday evening, or I guess Saturday morning, depending on where you are in the world for some folks. Let's see. Any other thoughts folks need to make sure they get in before we conclude?
Yes, can I be heard?
Caller in Florida, yes, sir.
Yes, sir. I forgot to mention. I have three. I want to share the voters restoration for the felons. There was a person that brought in a check for at least $40,000, I guess, to help pay off some fines. I don't know who it was, but as I mentioned before, it looks like a lot of the white women were upset about this. And someone made a comment saying that, oh, here comes more payments. Looks like they're trying to buy votes. So this was said in front of my mom. So she replied saying, I'm not going to get into that. We're going to get back to work. So that was her response to that. So apparently, before the due date was done for them to register to vote, there was a lot of fines and fees being paid off for the felons for them to be able to vote for in the election. I have two more. The warden on two separate occasions, and I thought about these two when you mentioned the nonverbals and the body language. So I'm bringing in the mail one morning, okay, and we happened to connect in the hallway. So I said, you know, morning, Miss Seven says, the mail is here. So she's standing there, she was scratching her forearm, like, you know, scratching it, like, mildly. I'm like, that's interesting. I ain't never seen that. So, you know, I dropped off the mail bin, you know, went on about my business, and then another day separate, like a few weeks later, I was going to clock out, walking down that same hallway toward the administration room. You know, that's where the top people are. Recording again, I had a purse, right, walking from the clerk's office, you know, the top white person in charge. So it's a clock out machine that where I swipe the card to go to lunch. Now, she was walking in my direction, and she turns sharply to go to a black female's desk. And I could see in the reflection that she was standing there with her arms folded, so she obviously was avoiding me. This is the warden, man. This is the warden. She didn't even want to cross me in the hallway. But see, I had to send that email, and they still ain't respond to it. You know, I had questions in there. I thought we're not supposed to be discriminating, right? You know, I got evidence. I got papers, you know. that I can share. So the avoidance and the nonverbal is definitely present. And the last one is that's the same black female. She forgot her password, right? And the IT person was trying to help her get a new password. So he leaves to go to the supervisor's office. So she's like, oh, this didn't work. I need him to come back. Where is he? So she gets up from the desk and walks over to the other area. And I hear a click number, another one, different one. She says, huh, what did she break this time? Huh. So I jot that one down. She just trying to get another password. And she puts out this racist, vicious statement. What did she break this time? Just trying to get a password? Wow. So the perception of black people being destructive, incompetent, low IQ, the same usual racist preconceived notion that white people have. And that's all I have. Thank you.
Same preconceived notions. Pitiful. Much obliged, caller in Florida. We're basically at the end. Everybody is satisfied. We didn't miss anyone. We'll assume folks are grand. Thought I saw another hand, but much obliged to everyone for participating. Stay safe. Man, lack self-respect. Snitch if you have to, but take your safety seriously. I cannot stress that enough. Take your health seriously. Rona and beyond. You've heard that for the mom in that situation where she's, you know, miscarriage. She could be having a miscarriage, you know, having to deal with all that stress in the workplace, getting sick, and we don't care. We didn't get her email. Nah. Got these spots to fill. They're putting her in the worst scheduled spots. Just, you know, be really mindful about your health and well-being. Nobody cares about the health and well-being of black people, black males, black females, black children, black pregnant moms. None of the above. So you have to be primary and on the spot about that at all times. That's it. Sobriety would be best. Now, the New York Times report that we read, where the white people had the shindig and all, I don't know if it was liquor there. They didn't say it, but if they got, you know, a black person coming out in a janitor costume to dance and then some white people going up in afros, my suspicion is that there is probably a mixed beverage or three on the premises. Sobriety would be best under conditions of white supremacy. In addition to being sober, I would say let's be buckled, but I'm still of the opinion, let's stay in the house. It has been a super dangerous year for bunches of reasons. Unless you got something like essential, super serious reason to be leaving the residence, stay at home. Like, if you are going out, your head is on a swivel. You are alert. I am paying attention to what's happening around me. If it looks like, especially a white person has turned up getting loud, but if anybody being rowdy, hostile, I'm not getting any verbal skirmishes with anybody. I'm thinking if this is a white person, he, she could be armed. I did not leave my residence to be killed or to enter into mortal combat. As I said, I'm not even having a verbal skirmish with anybody. If it gets to that point, out of here. Get that exit strategy. No unnecessary risks as we close out 2020. They already said we got lots of firearms and people are looking to get rowdy about the election. So hunker down. In addition to being sober, if we're going out, you're sober. You are buckled. If you are driving, you are not on the cell phone. Same principle. We need all of our attention. Paying attention to what's happening around us, and we are trying as best we can to minimize contact with race soldiers, badge or no. You got lots of armed white people out and about. With that, Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Cow signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim,
your
brother.
Problem. You're a victim.
I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my conditioning. Mm-hmm. Even my conditioning has been conditioned.